Messages from the house.
February the 17th, 2009, from the House of Representatives. Concurrence requested. Mr. President, the following bills are concurrence requested. Senate File 8, Feral Livestock. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 60. Senate File 11, State Park Ranger Authority. Ayes 48, noes 12. Senate File 21, Subdivisions Located Within Irrigation Districts. Ayes 54, noes 6. Senate File 25, District Courts Release of Information. Ayes 59, noes 1. Senate File 31, Brucellosis Surveillance Program 2. Ayes 56, noes 4. Senate File 36, Intentional Feeding of Elk. Ayes 45, noes 15. Senate File 58, Vehicle Title and Registration. Ayes 60. Senate File 61, Sex Offenders Registration. Ayes 60. Senate File 70, Loss of Firearms Rights Protections. Ayes 59, noes 1. Senate File 86, Revised Uniform Anatomical Gift Act. Ayes 59, noes 1. Senate File 117, Wyoming Health Insurance Pool Act Eligibility. Ayes 53, noes 7. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Concurrences.
Do I get something to read on it?
Senator Von Platerin, are you ready for message number 318?
Yes, I am, Mr. President.
Reading clerk, please read in the message.
February the 17th, 2009, from the House of Representatives, message number 318, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 58, Vehicle Title and Registration. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 60. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Senator Von Platerin.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move concurrence on message number 318 and urge you to vote aye. Fellow Senators, what this amendment does is goes to, it's very simple. They just really cleaned up a couple of things that we must have missed. Page 2, line 2, instead of, you delete the word act, insert article. So the following vehicles are exempt from the provisions of this article. Page 2, line 15, you go to vehicles and you delete the remainder of the line, and then page 2, the next line down, line 60, you delete that line and insert, displaying the registration numbers or plates required by a Wyoming statute and whose operator produces a certificate of registration indicating the vehicle is validly registered pursuant to Wyoming statute. So just some cleanup and makes it a little more explicit there. Page 39, line 22, goes into after vehicle, you insert that is not a commercial vehicle. Once again, separating the fact that commercial vehicles are treated differently and referring back to their First Amendment. Page 40, line 20, after applicable, insert an owner of a commercial vehicle that is not a Wyoming-based commercial vehicle as defined by Wyoming statute. So that separates the commercial vehicles, which are registered differently. It makes that very obvious. And then page 41, line 11, it says a temporary registration permit under this subsection shall not be considered an initial registration. So page 41, line 11, you would delete the not. So it would now read a temporary registration permit under this subsection shall be considered an initial registration. Something we missed, and it's pretty obvious there, actually. So I ask for your aye vote on this. Any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Discussion? Senator Burns? The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 58 and vote aye. The chief clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout excused. Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dicaria?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Excused.
Excused. Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin? Massey,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Sessions,
aye.
Townsend,
aye.
Basie,
aye.
Bonflatern,
aye.
President Hines.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 28 ayes, 2 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 58. Reports from standing committees.
February the 17th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 134, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, and Sessions, Senator Burns, Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, the bill that was just read in, House Bill 34, Natural Resource Large Project Funding, has an appropriation. I'd ask that you re-refer it to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Without objection, House Bill 34 will be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Considerations of bills in general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are that order of business. Considerations of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I move that the Senate resolve itself back into the Committee of the Whole to continue discussion on House Bill 80 and other such bills on the general file.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Coe.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I have the privilege of the floor.
You may have the privilege of the floor.
Mr. Chairman, I'm informed that we have in the gallery the Wyoming Human Resources Society here visiting the Senate today. I'd ask them to stand and be recognized and ask the Senate to help me welcome.
Welcome to the Senate. The Committee of the Whole will come back to order. When we adjourned before lunch, we were on House Bill 80. We were on Senator Ross's motion, and I believe that the good senator from Laramie County had just completed maybe a third of the debate. So, Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We had completed 3511, 314, and 315. We are now at 3511-316, and would yield the floor to the good senator from Uinta County.
Senator DeCarian.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We went through, the senator from Laramie County went through the application process. 3511-316 is now the hearing that goes on in front of the Wyoming Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. As you can see on page 5, it lays out that once they have the information, they will set the hearing. Going over onto page 6, they have 30 days to make sure that they mail to everyone that's on the list, everyone that's going to be affected from this process. And subsection B, and then so after considering the application and hearing the evidence, they shall enter an order setting forth the following findings, and then you can see on page 6 the listings of the findings that they're going to put together in order to get the parameters for this hearing. And that, you know, you can see them listed there. Going over onto page 7, continuing there, such things as the quantity of the pore space, the method that's going to be used, the method which the economic benefits will be allocated between the members of this, and then also the method of generating economic benefits. Mr. Chairman, and I will point out this, that this is where the standing committee will come in. I'll explain the bill, and then we can talk about the standing committee part of this. But on Roman and 8 would be how the cost would be shared. Now, what you have to remember on this piece of legislation, this was patterned after the forced pooling in the oil and gas statutes. And in the case of forced pooling, there is a profit to be made, and there are the monetary gains that will happen. And so when you pull somebody into the pool that doesn't necessarily hasn't agreed to be there, they are going to have some economic benefit, but it's also assumed that they're going to share in the cost of extracting the minerals and getting those out of the ground. That's not so clear on the use of the pore space here. You know, there may be times, and in fact, most of the times, it may be just that somebody has to, in order to continue to use coal, they have to sequester the carbon and they're going to have to use it. So that's going to be a part of their business that they're going to need. So they're going to need to find a site in order to sequester that carbon dioxide. And so it might not be the same type of arena that you see when you're extracting oil and natural gas. And so on we're Romanet 8, it talked about the pore space owners, and it's going to list the considerations that will have to go in as far as sharing those costs. And going on to the next page, you can see that, you know, there's a method under A, fairly and equitably provide for the alignment of pore space storage capacity, such pore space owners. B, fairly and equitably provide for allocation of the cost of the unit operations. C, provide for fair and equitable terms and conditions for removal of the unit operator. D, adjustments among the pore space owners for respective investments. E, it provides for allocations of the cost of the unit operations, fair and equitable method for determining and allocating such costs. Mr. Chairman, that will all be covered in the standing committee amendment, that part of the cost. And then, Mr. Chairman, on the next page, this one will not be covered in that, except that we're going to change that the standing committee amendment would change the numbering of this paragraph. And then it would include other requirements specified by rules or regulations adopted by the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission have been met. And so that would be the procedure for the hearings in front of the Oil and Gas Conservation Commissions. Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this point in time, it would be a good time to discuss the Standing Committee Amendment, which is going to be carried on the floor by Senator Burns.
And, Mr. Vice President, I believe we do have a motion on that, so I'll defer to Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, actually, the need for this Standing Committee Amendment was adequately explained by the good senator from Uinta County. Basically, it keeps the pore space owner who has been pulled into the unit from having to share in the cost of actually sequestering the CO2 down there. That may or may not be the case, depending on what the contractual obligation is or contractual relationship is between the parties, but it's something we really don't want to put in statute to force them to have to share those costs. The comparison or the metaphor I used in committee is that if you've got a row of six garages and I own the sixth garage and they unitize those garages, then they are going to take and use my garage, the space in my garage to store the CO2. It's not the same, not necessarily the same as oil or gas, where you're taking a product out and you're getting money off the income from that. We're talking about an entirely different creature, and we're not exactly sure what dimensions this is going to take. So one of the things we don't want to do is put in statute and require that they be part of the allocated costs for either sequestering or storing or the liability for the storage of the CO2. And that's frankly exactly what this amendment does. If you go to page 7, we delete lines 20 through 23. On page 8, we delete basically the entire page. Page 9, we basically renumber. Page 13, line 22, we remove the language on line 22, or allocation of costs. I'm sorry, or allocation. Page 13, line 23, we delete the word cost. Mr. Chairman, I just want it to be known that this Standing Committee amendment was done in with the cooperation and agreement of the Nebashi representative from Campbell County over in the other end of the House, who has been basically the guiding force on this whole thing, and he agreed to this amendment also.
Discussion on the Standing Committee amendment. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, with the Standing Committee amendment taking out this section, including the provision at the top of page 8, lines 1 through 3, where you're allocating the pore space available, is there something that remains in the bill where you have a somebody that doesn't sign the agreement, yet whose pore space is going to be used, and I think that's geologically determined. Is there something that gets him a share of the revenue? How is that handled? Is that, if this amendment passes, is that handled somewhere else in the bill?
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the answer to that question is yes. And if you'd go back to page 7, Romanets 5 and 6, you'll see that in the findings of the commission, they got to find, the quantity of the store pore space capacity and the method to determine that. If you go down into Romanet 6, the allocation of the economic benefits, so it's still in there. So by removing this, basically what we did was remove that allocation of costs issue, which seemed to be problematic and everybody seemed to agree with. Remember that where we took this statute or this language was from the unitization statutes already in the Oil and Gas Commission, but with regard to enhanced oil recovery. And so the more and more we work through this and the more and more we work the bill, became clearly evident that we didn't want that language in there, and I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've had some experience with communitization of oil properties, and the way they do that with the oil is they have a non-consent clause in the operating agreement, and they don't have to put any money up, but they don't get any money until they get their money paid, or what their expenses would be paid back to them, usually on a penalty of 100%, 200%, 300% is the way that works.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's absolutely correct, and this was based on that. However, where it diverges, frankly, is on an oil and gas unitization. You're pumping a product out, so you don't get your money back until that much of the product has been pumped out to cover your cost, whether it be 1 to 300%. This is a different animal because you're actually pumping something you don't want into storage. So we don't know at this point how that's going to be handled. So we're leaving that up to the contractual relationship between the parties rather than stating than putting something that may or may not apply into statute.
We're on Senator Ross's motion that the Senate adopt the Standing Committee Amendment to House Bill 80. All in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. That's been adopted. Back on the bill. Mr. Vice President.
Balance of the bill I will go over with you quickly. Remember that in the legislation that we passed last session, we set up the permitting process and the rules and regs and everything for the permitting. So before you ever even can get to a unitization, you're going to have to have already had some permits, and now you're trying to get the surface owners and the landowners into this unit. And the important thing to remember about this bill is that you have two different options. One, we believe, is totally not a viable option, and that's eminent domain. The other option is unitization. And the good thing about unitization is that we have experience in that. The Oil and Gas Commission has been doing this for a long time, and it is not a takings, because the landowners, pore space owners, they get to share in the economic benefit. So I just wanted to point that out as we move forward, because the last pages of this bill deal with what is the order that's coming forth from the Oil and Gas Commission. And you'll see that there are provisions that are almost identical to the current statutes with regards to unitization and enhanced oil recovery. First of all, no order of the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission can be authorized for the commencement of unit operations until the plan of unitization has been approved by at least 80% of the pore space storage capacity within the unit area. And that's fairly consistent in how they did things previously. We provide for notice of that order, and that's all on page 9. And it goes over and provides a similar process as in unitization in oil and gas, which is that any interested person can apply with the Oil and Gas Commission for a reduction of that amount of 80% down to 75% under certain circumstances, and also on the Oil and Gas Commission, if the proposed operator has been trying to negotiate for at least 9 months with landowners and so forth, and has participated in negotiations diligently and in good faith, and he shows that to the Oil and Gas Commission, they can go to 75%, and that's on the bottom of page 10. We provide in paragraph D on page 11 who can't do this, in essence. And what would be unlawful if somebody was not the unit operator or other persons in this, that's unlawful and prohibited. Paragraph E on page 11 over to page 14 is the same language, but it's if the Oil and Gas Commission wishes to amend its order. The same procedures are available as I just went over with you on the initial order. The Oil and Gas Commission on paragraph F, upon its own motion or application and with notice and hearing, and notice we always have notice provisions in here. We always have require a hearing, may modify its order regarding the operation of the size or other characteristic of the unit in order to prevent or assist in preventing a substantial inequity from resulting from the operation of the unit. So any poor space owner who is not in G on page 14, who is not within the geological sequestration site, may petition for inclusion in that unit. And that's in paragraph on page 14 and on over. You'll see on page 16 that we, in Romanet, or in paragraph J, that we make it specific that no provisions of 3511, 314 through 317 shall be construed to confer on any person the right of eminent domain. The balance of the bill is basically contained in their powers. It gives them powers and so forth to the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Those are all fairly standard and within current law. We just kind of borrowed them and brought them over to this unitization. So I think we have provided a good mechanism to handle this. It is... it is tried and tested, particularly in the oil and enhanced oil recovery, and I believe it's fair and equitable to the landowners, poor space owners, to share and to provide for them whatever those economic benefits may be. And we certainly don't know what that is at this point in time. It could be cap and trade. It could be some sort of carbon credit. We don't know for sure, but certainly it appears that there at some point in time is going to be a market. Whether or not it's cost feasible or not at this point in time remains to be seen, but certainly there could be a market, and we would want to be ahead of the game, and I think that this is a methodology that is fair to all involved. So urge your favorable consideration of House Bill 80.
A discussion on House Bill 80. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, just a question. Given the deletions we did in the Standing Committee amendment, if you're a poor space owner and petition to get into the unit, as I read this, you have to come up with all the costs, and you, rather than being in that unique position of a poor space owner, you're in the position of an operator. And I'm looking on page 14, lines 20 through 22, and again on page 15, lines 12 through, I think it's 17. In other words, if you're trying to get in, even as a poor space owner, you're liable for all the costs preceding.
Senator Ross.
Chairman, you're not, the answer would be no. You're only liable to pay the cost of what it involves you to be included in the proceedings. In the proceedings costs themselves rather than the costs of being now becoming an operator.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, related question. You have a circumstance where say somebody's building a coal-fired power plant. They've got some of this new technology that we're helping develop, and they're separating out part of the CO2 stream and going to sequester it because the customers are demanding that. And they cut a deal with your neighbor. And you think that, gee, they're going to use storage space under your place as well as your neighbor's place. And so you want to share. Do you proceed as described here on page 14, or do you come in with a petition as described on page 1 and 2? How do you proceed to protect your interests in those circumstances?
Mr. Vice President.
Well, Mr. Chairman, first of all, if it's going to occur, there's, you know, the Oil and Gas Commission and DEQ is already going to be involved in terms of the permitting process, and there's also notices and so forth in that. I'm not, you know, that's a good question. It would seem to me that you could use both potentially. You could use either one. I think any interested party, we've already given them that right to come in, and I would suspect that maybe those that have been involved in enhanced oil recovery unitizations before, this was probably not an unusual situation where somebody comes in and says, wait a minute, I want to be part of that situation. I think the rules and regs of the Oil and Gas Commission already provide for that situation, but I'll leave it to those that might be better informed than me, like the good senator from the northeast part of the state.
Senator Townsend from the northeast part of the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I do have an insight of that. The Oil and Gas Commission are very particular about what you take out and where you put it in and who it affects. So in a, say, a regular water flood where you put water in to push oil out, you have to prove to the Oil and Gas Commission virtually by a shadow of a doubt that you will keep your operation within the bounds of the communitized unit. So if somebody wanted to put CO2 into your property and there's any evidence at all that it would go on someone else's property, then they would make sure, before they allowed that to happen, to communitize the area that they you could defend as to holding the CO2. So you really can't get away with that without a geological study, and it's all pretty direct through the Oil and Gas Commission. And like I said, they've had probably 90% of the wells in Wyoming have been subject to that. There's over 200 units active right now in the state of Wyoming that have just this scenario that we have, only they put water in and get oil out instead of just to put carbon dioxide in.
Senator Scott.
I do think it's a fundamental question here, and I think it's a legal question. I'm sure in the oil and gas situation where you're producing a product for sale, that's all been well worked out. But I think it needs to be clear in one of these, how does somebody who thinks that they're using his pore space, that he ought to have some of the revenue, get involved when the neighbor has cut a deal and they're all putting it in there, you think it's going to spread and they're going to use your property? How do you force them to do one of these unitizations? What's the mechanism? Where do you apply? Are you going to be treated as if you're going to have to put up a lot of money to get involved in the proceeding? Or do you start the petition to start with? And suppose you can't get agreement of all the participants, because half of them have cut a deal and they're perfectly content and they don't want to agree to letting anybody else in. I'm not quite clear how you proceed here.
Senator DiCaria.
Well, Mr. Chairman, they wouldn't be able to proceed if they're going to use pore space that they don't own. So if they were going to pump something in the ground that was going to go into your pore space, I wouldn't think they'd want to do that, because then they become liable, and then, you know, I guess you'd open the door to whatever settlement that you could come up with, because they've, you know, done something on your property without your permission. But, Mr. Chairman, I don't think the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission will allow them to do that. As far as the part of the plan, they would not allow them to say, okay, that's what you're going to do. You're going to pump it under your neighbor's ground without having the permission of that adjoining property owner. I don't think they get that permit in the first place, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Townsend?
Well, he's exactly right. The Oil and Gas Commission take a pretty good hold of that, and they call it compensatory royalty, or the government, if the federal government thinks that you're taking oil off or putting water into their formation, they're on an adjacent area, then all they need to do is serve the Oil and Gas Commission notice that you're doing that, and then if it did get through where it got started, then the Oil and Gas Commission would immediately stop everything. But they won't even allow it unless you prove that this all the farther the CO2 would go. So the Oil and Gas Commission is very protective of just that, what you're worried about.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think if you just go back to 3511.315, any interested person, prevent anybody who is interested, and I think they would be able to show, if in fact that was the situation, that any interested person may file an application. So in the scenario brought by the good senator from Natrona County, I think that other landowner would be considered interested and may file an application with the Oil and Gas Commission requesting an order. If there's already a unitization going on, then they can file to have an amended order. So that's why I said I think they can do it both ways. And so I believe that individual landowner out there who thinks his rights are being impeded upon would have a recourse through the Oil and Gas Commission.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask if during the discussions on this, was there any testimony that came in and said that the state would probably go to the path of least resistance and probably look at depleted hydrocarbon zones because that's where we have the most data, and that those have already been tested beyond belief, and that those are probably the first candidates rather than going out and finding some new formation that we have no data on? Was that ever brought up in conversation or debate?
Mr. Vice President.
Mr. Chairman, the answer would be yes. In fact, we've heard from some of the top geologists and scientists in the world throughout our couple years of dealing with this topic. What you're looking at is some pretty special geological formations. Generally, it's going to be some very deep saline aquifers that we're already in the process of looking at in various respects. And, of course, then, you know, state geologists is getting into the whole arena now of starting to map out where are these sites. Certainly we're way ahead of the game, but ultimately I don't think you will see these kinds of projects in something that isn't highly contained, or at least contained to a pretty high degree, basically because we have certain areas in the state of Wyoming, like the Rock Springs uplift, that may very well already be a place where we can store large quantities of CO2. But all of that is yet to be determined as the science moves on, as the technology improves, and as we decide, as we are able to map out these formations. I think you will see those areas first, and then as we move further on down the line, and I think it's going to be quite some time before you'll actually see any storage of CO2 in areas that are kind of iffy.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I have a series of questions, and let me say that I think this unitization is the right way to go in terms of the CO2 storage. I think the concept is right, but I have some question as to whether this bill is really ready for prime time just yet. And so let me ask a couple of questions. On page 1, starting on line 16, you have a purpose clause. And traditionally, We have generally rejected purpose clauses in here. And the reason being that if it requires a purpose clause to explain what we're doing, probably the wording back in the statute is not really clearly enough done. And so my question is, do we really need that purpose clause, or should we remove it the way we traditionally remove purpose clauses?
Mr. Vice President.
Mr. Chairman, to answer that question, I believe the answer, at least from the committee standpoint, is yes. We are breaking new ground here, and one of the things that we wanted to do was to is to indicate that whatever we're doing here in this unitization is declared to be a protection of corresponding rights. Now, corresponding rights is a new term, and it's defined down in Romanet I. It is in the oil and gas statutes now under unitization and in enhanced oil recovery. It's called correlative rights, it's a new term, but it means the same thing. So we wanted to make sure also that everybody knows that we still have to comply with environmental requirements. Part of this whole deal is what we sell, not to ourselves in the state of Wyoming, but what do we sell nationally to these states that are wanting to buy green power, i.e. California and so forth. So part of the reason that we think that this is important is that in negotiations that have been ongoing, former president and others' leadership have already been out with the governor to California. They are very much impressed with where we're going. If we want them to buy our power and whatnot, they've got this whole deal about buying green. We're letting them know that we're complying with environmental requirements to facilitate the use of our energy resource. So it's not so much a message for us as it is as a message to those states that we want to sell to our energy and so forth, that we're there and you should buy our power because we are green.
Further discussion? Senator Scott.
Chairman, I would observe that there's a number of departures from some of our normal drafting process here, some of which I think we can cure with a second reading amendment. There's certain language that we just don't tend to use that they're using here. On page 9, subsection C, it starts on page 9, got a great big run-on provision. Would that be much better understood if you subdivided it into subsections and subparagraphs and that sort of thing? Is that adequately understandable the way it is now?
Mr. Vice President.
Mr. Chairman, anything that we can do to make the bill better, that would be great. And remember, this is language that we just kind of peeled off from elsewhere. So, if we want to break that up into smaller sentences and so forth so that it says the same thing, that'd be great. Because it is, I mean, I had to spend a lot of time reading paragraph C, which is all of about 2.5 pages long. And then the same thing, of course, for when we amend the order, same language, it goes about 2.5 pages long. So that there's some validity to that.
Senator Scott.
Chairman, two more questions. How much scrutiny and public input did this bill get during the interim? Was it the subject of one committee meeting, more committee meetings? How much public input and what kind of public input was there? And second question is, how much is this engrossed bill changed from the bill as introduced?
Discussion? Mr. Vice President.
To answer the first question, this bill and this topic, of course, has been assigned to us for a number of years. And even as far as last year, we were exploring, before the last legislation, unitization, but decided that probably better left for this session in a separate bill. So it's had a number of different hearings along the way, or at least the concept has. During the interim, we met every time we met, we dealt with CO2 carbon sequestration, and this topic has come up. Now, this bill has gone through major rewrite, and it went through another rewrite in the House with the good assistance of Representative Throne and Lubnow, who, particularly Representative Throne, who does a lot of work in front of the EQC and or the Environmental Quality, and we took this bill back to what we thought was the best, which was Oil and Gas Commission to deal with unitization. They're still permitting language and so forth in our previous previous bills with regards to the Environmental Quality Division. But what was the other question? How much rewrite? Well, I think it's been overhauled quite a bit. And each time we go through that, for instance, we in the Senate Judiciary took out all the cost allocation language, and that was approved by all of the sponsors and all of those that have been working so heavily. If you recall, this committee was allowed by Management Council to bring in others. So we had, for instance, Senator Bebout and Senator Nicholas at times, and of course, Senator Lubnow and others that gave their input. And industry, believe me, has been there at each and every committee meeting, and really, for all intents and purposes, in the governor's office, been involved in this process. So what I would tell you is that there really hasn't been a lot of negativity towards the concept. Now, whether or not you believe the bill is ready for prime time or not, if it needs some more rewrite, I believe we can still do that on second and third reading.
With all due respect to good Vice President, we normally don't refer to members of the other body on the floor. So for members of the Senate, please take that into consideration. Senator Schiffer first.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to respond in a little bit different angle to my colleague from Natrona County. One of the things we bump against is that the consumers for energy in the state of Wyoming are not energy producing state. They do produce some energy, but they either consume it all plus a great deal. For example, our big neighbor clear to the west with the large governor, or it's the one down south. That produces very little energy, or there's two states up in the Northeast. And in working with those folks in the energy area, first of all, virtually all of their legislation has an intent clause in it. That's the way they write it. We don't write it much, but I hope you'll understand, in great part, we're doing this to maintain our markets with them, to meet their standards. They have to feel comfortable that what we're sending them really is what we're representing it to be. While they have not showed up at any of these hearings, nor would I expect them to, are they watching this bill? I've already had an email from a counterpart on the West Coast, kind of in the middle, saying, what is that? What does it mean? In other words, when we use a unitization concept, that's not something they're particularly familiar with, but they want an assurance that what we're delivering to them meets their standard. So in terms of has this bill, is it being watched, is it being used, I think that's the if we can get them to understand unitization, the concept, the safety features that our colleague from up in Crook and Weston talked about. Folks, when we say we're sequestering it, we are. They got to believe that because they're buying this stuff from us. So I urge you to use some caution when you take out an intent clause, which we normally do. They are very, very, they think legislation without it is only half-baked. All of them use it. And I think it's, I hate to use the word PR for their sake, but maybe that's really what it is. But I urge you to, let's not pull it out too hastily.
Senator Esquivel.
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering, I think to some extent I understand the process of unitization and arguments sometimes made on small fractional shares of ownership when those disputes arise, but I was wondering if there was any testimony or any consideration given to how future generations might argue fractional shares of ownership of pore space. Because, of course, on the one hand, you're with oil and gas, you're talking about something that's extracted. In this case, we're talking about something that's injected. And I was just wondering if the arguments would be the same in terms of ownership rights as far as future generations, or if other arguments would be used. I'm just kind of curious. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, in discussions with the fine senator from Natrona County referred to, you know, the most recent rewrite, what and how this is how this is processed and come along is this latest one is patterned. We wanted, or those mines who work in this area wanted to felt that all the unitization processes, whether it be for oil and gas production or for this process, be with the Oil and Gas Commission, so that the two, and it was worked so that this process for this unitization of carbon sequestration would dovetail with the unitization process under the Oil and Gas Commission structures like it exists today, because that's where the experience is. That's where the whole thing has been, and we felt like it was way stronger there. And I'll just answer, and maybe my fine chairman can shed some more light on this, is as a holder of a minute fraction of an original, original oil share in the Bighorn Basin, and I mean minute. I look at it as the same thing that's happened to our oil and gas statutes. This parts of the family own, and it's come down several generations. It's just it's a tiny, minute thing, and I'm sure that it drives those people who do this, the business people. I'm sure it drives them crazy to put those royalties out in $10 and $15 checks. And I look at this the same way. We've divided this the very same way. That same kind of issue. If you sell your pore space if you're a service owner and you sell your pore space, then that kind of dividing up will occur down the road just as it has under the oil and gas structure.
Senator Burns.
And also in answer to the question from the senator from Laramie County, yes, that you will see fragmentation like that. Frankly, that was a policy decision that this body made last year when we decided to be able to sever the pore space from the surface estate. And if we had kept it with the surface estate, we wouldn't be running into that, but that was the policy decision we made at that time. Frankly, it doesn't have a lot to do with this particular bill.
Mr. Vice President.
Mr. Chairman, but in addition to that, you will, regardless of whether or not the pore space is severed, you can see fractionalization. I mean, you'll see it as Farmer Brown sells or dies and he has four children, leaves it to his children. Now it's fractionalized into quarters, and it may go on down that way. So regardless of whether or not it's severed from the pore space or not, you're still probably going to see some fractionalization of that interest. But that's how we've handled property rights for eons.
Senator
And it's no different than what we currently do in other respects. So this bill doesn't really even touch.
Let's see, the motion was this morning. I got to think about it. The question's on Senator Ross's motion that House Bill 80 pass Committee of the Whole. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. House Bill 80 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 102. The reading clerk will read the House Bill.
House Bill number 102, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, Excise Tax Vendor Compensation, and Acts Relating to Taxation and Revenue. It was referred to Committee number 3, Revenue, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer. No, Senator Case, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 102, which is Excise Tax Vendor Compensation. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. Could I ask that it be read in at this time?
The reading clerk, please read the standing committee amendment.
House Bill 102, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Engrossed Copy, page 2, line 4.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, and as I go through the bill, I'll address the standing committee amendment along with the bill because it fits right into the bill. Mr. Chairman, what this bill does, this provides a credit to the people that have to fill out the forms and write the checks for sales tax. It kind of compensates them for doing that. At one time, this was a relatively simple process, but as we all know, things get more complex the older we get, the longer it's around. And this is one of those things that has gotten complex, and so what we're trying to do is leave a little bit of money in your local community that your the people that operate your businesses will have in their pocket for being your local tax collector. The nuts and bolts of the bill start on the top of page 2. A credit will be allowed against the taxes imposed for the vendors. And they do have to turn in forms. Form 41-1 is the main form. And while it looks relatively simple, I looked at it, and it actually is can get quite complex. If you have a large business or even a small business, you as the business owner have to spend the time to do this. On this 41-1, what we'll do is we'll put whatever we end up with, if this bill goes through, that they can deduct part of the expense for for keeping the books and sending this tax in. Mr. Chairman will recall that Wyoming is we get people to volunteer, and I use that term very loosely, but they volunteer to do this. This is a way to compensate them. If the vendor fails to pay the tax, obviously he isn't going to get the credit. And by the way, and I want you to make sure you note this, that we hold your local cities and counties harmless. That's on page 2, lines 12, 13, and 14. The entire tax credit, the way this is written, comes out of the state's share because we are very fond of our friends in the cities and counties of this state. Going on, we skip over to 3916107, basically the same language. And here, Mr. Chairman, I'll deal with the amendment. As the bill was crafted when it came over to us, it was a 1% deduct. In committee, we changed that to a 2% deduct, which doubles it roughly from 1 to 2. So that's the change there on lines, page 2, line 23, page 2, line 4. But that's the bill. The final part of the standing committee amendment is the effective date, 1 April 2010. We do that to coincide with the tax.
Senator Schiffer, would you move the standing committee amendment for us, please? I don't believe you did.
I didn't move it?
Would you like to?
I would like to.
We'd be thrilled up here if you
would move the standing committee number one to House Bill 102. We did read it in, though.
We read it in, but it...
Okay. Yep. Anyway, that's the amendment. I'll be happy to answer. I'd like to take up the amendment first because that is the nuts and bolts of the bill.
Senator Meyer, on the amendment.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just looking at the fiscal note on the back of this, it's going to hit the general fund a little over $3 million, and then we're going to backfill a little over $2 million, or almost $3 million. Then that's at 1%, and you double it. We're kind of talking like a $12 million hit here. I'm wondering if I'm doing the math right on that. I see one head shaking no, but I'm looking at the fiscal note on the back of House Bill. That's the upper limit I'm hearing is it's going to be $12 million. Well, I guess, I don't know, Mr. Chairman, I think we need some clarification on that, and I'd ask people to resist this just from the standpoint as whether or not we need to look at this at this point in time.
On the amendment, Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I ask you to support the amendment. We kept the upper limits the same. That's going to mean that the bigger businesses, the box stores, et cetera, are going to hit that upper limit probably, and that's what you're reading about in the fiscal note. But for the ma and pa's and the small businesses and that have to go through all of that, yeah, it is doubling it. But that isn't going to double the fiscal impact. And I would submit to you that we've been talking about this in Wyoming for a long, long time. There was a time for years that I was always against it. That time has changed. Folks, this has become complex, time-consuming, and takes a lot out of small business. And I think now's the time to do it. I believe that we should allow those small businesses in particular, and the big businesses are going to get it, but they're only going to get it up to that maximum, to receive something for collecting our tax. I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's the right time, even though it's going to be a little hit to the budget. I concede that. But by golly, all those small businesses out there that now have to do this, do the forms, it's more complex, it's more time consuming, and I would ask you to approve the amendment.
Senator Nicholas.
Chairman, I guess, I would like to know what the fiscal impact is on the amendment versus what's on the original note. And when folks say that we want these communities or them to receive something for the taxes they pay, or they're collecting for us, they're receiving sewer, water, streets. They're receiving a whole group of items out of the general fund. And in the end, it's simply an exemption. And under our present budget, now we're going to absorb the entire amount, and it comes out of the mineral industry. And when we put dollars into the business-ready community grants, when we put dollars into Main Street programs, all of that are benefiting these folks, and I guess you can continue to make exemptions, and it's made up in one area only, and it's mineral tax. But I guess before we vote on the amendment, we ought to know what the fiscal impact of the green copy that came over is, and what's the effect of the fiscal impact of this amendment.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe where this all came from this last year is that as we go forward, and we are going forward with the streamlined sales tax, we have to pay those guys the same kind of fee. So we're sitting out here right now, and anything that takes place out there in the internet world and goes through this streamlined sales tax, those guys that do that are getting the processing fee. So what in the interim, what we were being told on the Revenue Committee in the interim was, looking at the sales line income tax with all that out there, that there's a processing fee that's being taken out of the tax. Here, there's not. And then over the interim, that's where this discussion and this idea came up. We're taking 2% right now as an administrative fee. There's no reason it can't come out of there.
On the amendment, Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, that's
an old one.
Well, this is the old one. Okay. But this is a team effort, Mr. Chairman. We're going to wear uniforms next week. Mr. Chairman, the net hit to the state is, with as you see it engrossed, $4,691,905. Yes, per annum. It is a hit. Make no mistake. You can spread that wealth around. Obviously, and I mentioned it as I went through it, when this bill went through the House, the cities and counties were held harmless. But that's the hit that you're paying. Your local, and these, you know, in terms of numbers, there isn't that many great, you know, there are the great big stores. They'll hit that maximum. You know, when they hit the 10,000, that's all they're not on a straight percentage. But this is all the other stores in all of our communities, and these people are doing the work, and it just seemed time that they got compensated for it. Is it a hit? You bet it is. Make no mistake about that. But these are the people that are paying your sales and use taxes. If you don't, you know, if you want to have the local governments bear part of it, that went on the other side after the during this session. But and that can go in and go out. That's a policy decision. But I hope when you look at the bill, you'll understand who's doing the work here. It is your mom and pop operations.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I may respond that these are the same people getting all the services and so on, I would suggest that it is the general population that is getting all the services, and it is the small businesses that are doing the collection. They're doing the work. Everybody gets the services. Everybody. Do they get a part of the services? Absolutely. But they're doing the work of collecting the tax for the state of Wyoming. And sure, they share in the services, but I would suggest to you that there's pretty small number of businesses in the relationship to all of those services out there that are provided. I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's a very business-friendly type of a thing. And I think it's about time that we compensated those, particularly the small businesses, for the complexity that our sales tax system has become.
Questions on Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, so with the bill as it stands without the amendment, the engrossed bill, the hit is $4.6 million to the general fund. What I haven't heard, I gather that the hit with the amendment is not twice that because of the cap. What I haven't heard is, does anybody know how much the hit is if we pass the amendment?
Are there any hit, Senator Schiffer?
If you pass the amendment, and that's what we're on, the hit is $4,691,905. That's the hit to our general fund. If you do not pass the amendment, if you take the bill as written in front of you, the hit to our general fund is $3,192,452 per year.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, Mr. Chairman, I collect this tax in my business. I really don't get this. Honestly, I just don't really get it at all. I don't think that I'm deserving of a payment for collecting the tax. It's a cost of doing business.
Senator Case, are you on the amendment or the bill?
It kind of affects either one, Mr. Chairman, because the amendment actually extends it by another $1 million. So, and everybody else was sort of talking more about the philosophy of the bill. So either way is fine. But I would be against the amendment because it costs us more money, and I'd also be against the bill. And I honestly just don't get this, Mr. Chairman. I think, especially with these tougher times coming up in Wyoming, to implement a new policy that you get paid to collect taxes sort of bugs me a little bit. And I think, I was a no vote.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just thought that it might help maybe, and this is on the amendment, Mr. Chairman, if maybe someone on the committee could maybe tell us about and we've had these numbers, I'm sure, but I just can't remember what the total amount of dollars collected in sales tax in the state is versus what this $4 million, and what part of that would it be? I suspect that it would be a fairly small amount when you consider the overall amount of sales tax that are being collected, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, while we're on this, and I guess it goes to the amendment and to the bill, was there any research done or any questions asked about the large stores versus the small ones? How many small mom-and-pop stores do we have left? In my community, I've watched the larger chains just kind of decimate any of the smaller mom-and-pop stores. So, you know, who are we giving this tax break to? Did you do any kind of investigation on the smaller stores versus the big stores that we see with most of the money, most of the business?
Is there a mom-and-pop expert here? Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Funny you should ask that. That's the information I was going to have here. Ultimately, the difference between the, and that's ultimately the reason for the amendment in the standing committee. Well, the bill as written would affect, would benefit 1,281 vendors in the state. And so, since it's limited to 1% with an upper cap of 1,000 in the bill as written, that was going to be 1,281. It's going to be the bigger stores that would do that. The concept with the amendment, in the committee, it wasn't unanimous. But the object or the idea being that if we kept the cap the same and raised it 2%, we'd pull more businesses in. And sure, and what we have is the number of vendors that would exceed the cap, according to the current records of the Department of Revenue, in the amendment would be 2,268, so not quite that. Well, yes, just about a doubling of the individuals who would qualify. And hence, the actual reason for the amendment is if you're going to do it, try and benefit as many as we could as opposed to just those who do large quantities.
The question's on Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President, I guess I'd speak on against the amendment. Folks, you don't have to go far back to Tax 2000 to remember what the criticism of our tax system is, that we don't have a very broad-based collection system. And every time you narrow or give an exemption to one group so they pay less, what you're doing is imposing it on other taxpayers. Now, if you look at, I've got a client that distributes, it has a mail house ordering facility in Casper. To comply with the streamlined sales tax, the cost of their program is about $40,000 a year just to maintain it and do it. Now, if you want to go and say, let's start giving people a discount for paying their taxes, start going to giving them those big hits. If you want to start giving people preparation taxes, you look at the large oil and gas companies. They have entire legions of people hired to collect their tax, undertake the tax, and we don't for a minute think that we ought to be compensating them for the cost to collect and rebate their taxes. So in the end, what you end up doing is you pick out a segment and say you're more deserving than everybody else. You could go to your income taxes saying we're going to let you deduct the cost of collect or preparing your income tax returns. You don't get to do that. So you pick up a lesser burden. Now, having said that, I work in a profession. I understand that we don't collect sales taxes because we do services. So I understand that maybe it seems it isn't as broad as it should be. But each time you do this, you essentially put the burden on someone else. We'll talk about the backfill issues later, but taking it from 1% to 2% essentially shifts that burden, concentrates it more and more on one single group, and we know what the group is. It's the oil and gas mineral industry.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. I'm going off the top of my head, but there was one question that we didn't respond to. And ultimately, it was how much is my recollection is about $900 million of sales taxes collected. To give you some idea of the total amount. And also just to reflect on some of the comments of the good senator from Albany County, actually we do discriminate that way in allowing who gets to deduct what in doing their taxes. If you itemize your federal income tax return, you get to deduct the cost of income tax preparation, whether it's the software you bought for $35 to do it yourself, or whether it's the CPA or the other taxpayer, you get to deduct that if you itemize. If you don't itemize, you don't get to deduct it. So ultimately, that analogy is out there. There is a deduction associated, a business deduction if you're in the business of associated with collecting those taxes. And so we do make those determinations all the time and decide that you collect tax, and you, if you don't qualify, you don't. Those things happen every day in the revenue situation. So decide what you want to do on the bill, but make your decision based upon the fact that this discrimination happens all the time in taxes, whether the federal level or the state level. So make your mind up on what you think the policy ought to be and vote accordingly.
On the amendment, Senator Larson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the amendment and for the amendment, as you heard described by the good senator from Laramie, there's one distinct difference in what he was talking about versus what the fact is here. You're not paying your own taxes. You're collecting taxes for the state of Wyoming. If we were giving the discount on taxes you owe, I would agree with that. That is not the case. The mineral industry, the IRS, all those things were mentioned are taxes that you owe as an individual. What we're giving something for is to pay those people that collect the taxes for the state from other people, not their taxes. That isn't their taxes they owe. They're collecting that and transmitting that to the state of Wyoming and providing a vital service to the state of Wyoming. So to say you're giving them a deduction on their taxes, folks, that's not their taxes. They're collecting taxes for the state from other people that is owed to the state of Wyoming. The state of Wyoming itself, before it sends it back to the counties, takes a fee for collecting and distributing the taxes that come from other people. You are not giving a discount, fellow senators, on those paying their taxes. You're giving a fee for those who do the work to collect taxes from other people, owed by other people, and distribute them back to the state of Wyoming. I urge you to approve the amendment.
Senator Massey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With regard to the amendment, this is a $1 million amendment, and we may have to think very hard about whether we can afford the bill at this time, given everything we're going through. But it seems to me to add $1 million on top of what our consideration is with regard to the entire bill seems rather extravagant.
Questions on Senator Cooper.
Chairman, well, on the amendment, it seems like a fairly small amount. I mean, to collect $900 million and just to pay somebody $4 million to collect it, that's a pretty good deal. I mean, $1 billion for crying out loud. On and for the amendment.
Questions on Senator Schiffer's motion that the Standing Committee Amendment to House Bill 102 be adopted. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay?
No.
The amendment's been defeated. Back on the bill, House Bill 102. Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the bill, I'm with the Senator from Landon. I just don't quite get why business as usual, you figured in the cost of business. Our sales tax, by the way, in most cases is not that difficult to do. I also collect it myself for two different businesses, so I understand that part of it. When you talk about it only being the state's part that we're going to do, which is the 4% if I don't have this wrong, and it's two-thirds of the 4% if I get that correct, you're up to $1.25 million, $1.5 million in business. So don't believe this is for your ma-and-pa store that collects. If they collect 100% on everything they sell, I mean, everything they sell is taxable, they have to do $1.25 or $1.5 million in business to get that $1,000 deduction. This is aimed at a larger group, a higher income group than your local ma and pa. I don't understand. All we've been talking about is how tight things are going to get, and yet we're going to give $4 or $5 million back. Being the cost of business,
It really is $1,000, $15 an hour, if that's what you pay that clerk, gives them roughly 60 hours in a year. Are you really paying back much of the cost of that clerk, and at 1.1 tenth of an hour a week to pay to do this? It's very similar to the grocery tax. Individually, it was a couple $300, but it was $47 million, give or take a few million to the state in a hit. We do a lot more good with that $47 million. We cut programs because we don't have it than the couple $100 that might have gone to good use within a family. This is cost of business, and I don't think we should change it, and I think you should defeat this bill.
Further discussion on House Bill 102. Senator Jennings.
My decimate's exactly right, almost. It is the cost of doing business. But at the same time, look how many tax exemptions that we've put through here. My decimate's got a folder someplace, he wouldn't let me have it, and it's got hundreds of them. Those are the ones that we have exempted from doing the work for the state. So when you shift that cost, and you say, somebody says, you know, well, you get all those services. Yeah, you do. But if you're in the service industry, we've exempt them. If you're in the wind, we've exempt them. If you're in certain parts of ag, we exempt them. So what you get down to is you get down to this subset of businesses that are collecting your sales tax, and you got this bigger group out there that's not. It's a small amount out of the processing of your sales tax going to the state. We ought to pass it.
Questions on Senator Schiffer's? Senator Nicholas.
In response to that, you know, we do give exemptions to folks to bring businesses to the state, wind energy and things like that. And we do that so they'll shop, bring their employees for these mom-and-pop brick-and-mortar businesses. In the end, I mean, you can create exemptions all you want. And when you create the exemptions, you're just simply saying that we're going to shift this cost to somebody else. And then, of course, we now, under the bill, say not only will we shift the cost to someone else, but the cities don't have to share any of the burden of this. So we're going to backfill them. And that means it comes out of our budget. And then the cities and towns and people still want their business-ready community grants. They still want the funds to come in and help the cities, towns, and counties for local government support, and you just can't do it all. And you can't keep shifting the burden to one sector and then saying, not a problem, we'll backfill it, and we'll go look to that sector to support us. And it was easy enough to do when you have ever-rising natural gas prices that we can just say, hey, not a problem, we got plenty of money. Folks, the money isn't there, and as you tend to hit the general fund, it's interesting to me that this thing is profiled to begin in 2010, so it doesn't even have to get profiled on it, so you don't even see the fiscal impact. And it's going to start hitting at a time where you're going to have less money to spend than you have today. I'd urge you to say no.
Questions on Senator Larson.
Just one more time. We keep hearing it's an exemption. Folks, it is not an exemption. It is not an exemption. It is to let them keep a fee of what they collect of other people's taxes. One more time, it is not an exemption. It's to let them keep a fee of what they spend in their time, effort, and money to collect the money for the state of Wyoming.
Questions on Senator Schiffer's motion that House Bill 102 pass committee of the whole. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay.
No.
House Bill 102 has failed to pass committee of the whole. Pursuant to Senate Rule 11-5, having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. Chief Clerk will call the roll. Excuse me, standing vote division being called for. All in favor of the bills, please stand. All opposed, please stand.
Sixteen.
House Bill 102 has failed to pass Committee of the Whole. Pursuant to Senate Rule 11-5, having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Bebout excused. Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Honeycutt?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Larson?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Massey?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Schiffer? Scott?
No.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
No.
Basie?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Hines.
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 12 ayes, 17 noes, 1 excused.
Having failed a roll call vote, House Bill 102 is deemed indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 165. Reading clerk will please read the House bill.
House Bill number 165, sponsored by Representative Lubnow, Adult Adoption, an act relating to civil procedure. It was referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCaria, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Senator Ross.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee whole rise and report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 165, Adult Adoption. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a fairly simple bill that tries to address a particular problem that was brought to a particular representative and senator regarding a situation that currently exists within our statutes, and that is that under Wyoming current law, pertaining to adoption of adults, it requires that the adult that's being adopted be a resident of the state of Wyoming. This can generally present a number of difficult situations for families who wish to adopt someone who has been a member of their family for all or a significant part of their life, and oftentimes circumstances intervene which prevent the adoption from taking place when the adopted person was a child and is now an adult. Simply what this bill does is it allows for the adoption of an adult regardless of where their residence is, either within or outside of the state, at the time the petition is filed. There are certain conditions, though. The adopting parent must be the step-parent or a grandparent or a blood relative, foster parent, a legal guardian, somebody that has participated in the rearing and raising of this child when the child was a child, now this person is an adult, and the adult consents to being adopted. So it just gets rid of that dichotomy as to whether or not you have to be within the state or outside of the state. This basically says we're opening up the adoption of an adult, and they don't have to be a resident of the state of Wyoming. I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Discussion on House Bill 165. Ready for the question? The question is on Senator Ross's motion that House Bill 165 pass Committee of the Whole. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. House Bill 165 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 2. The reading clerk, please read the House bill.
House Bill number 2, sponsored by Representative Childers, Street Rods and Custom Vehicles, and Act relating to motor vehicles. It was referred to Committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Esquibel, Geis, and Landon. No, Senator Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I ask her to do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 2 and to explain this medium-sized bill. Senator Townsend?
Senator Townsend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This little bill does about five different things. It specifies the requirements for registration of street rods and custom vehicles. It has provided definitions of thereof. It authorizes special vehicle equipment on those vehicles. It increases the fees as specified and provides for an effective date. What I call this bill is our own little small economic development bill. If you'd be surprised, maybe you wouldn't, but I find that it's practically every small town either wants to or does have a car show during the summer. Doesn't cost anything. The Chamber of Commerce loves it. They sell cookies and they have, you know, and they sell hot dogs and they just have a good time. And 200 or 300 of these cars show up and they always bring about 4 or 5 people with them. It's really a fun thing for a small town, and of course, particularly the big ones, they do it big time, but the small ones really have a lot of fun with that, and it's a good money maker for the locals. It's interesting that there are 35 active legal clubs in the state of Wyoming. There are about 1,500 members in those. I would bet that there's 3,000 to 4,000 people that have these specialty cars that probably don't belong to any clubs, but we're getting cars from all around the border states that we have around us, as well as it's amazing what cars come out of the old garage behind the house on a Sunday afternoon. I want to tell you about this bill. It defines what a street rod is and a custom vehicle. On page 1, line 14, street rods shall be registered and licensed pursuant to this section. And for any vehicle meeting the definition of a street rod, requires that a assigned vehicle identification number is provided. The model year that's listed on the certificate of title shall be the model year that the body of the vehicle resembles. So they don't really resemble the original one that your grandmother drove to church, but after the grandson gets done with it, it barely resembles the car that grandma had. The owner of the street rod shall register the vehicle. Then 10 days of acquisition of the vehicle, and if the vehicle is roadworthy, or within 10 days after the vehicle is made roadworthy, if it's not roadworthy at the time, he can submit the application to the department indicating that the operator has resided in Wyoming for at least a year. The vehicle will be maintained for occasional transportation, exhibition, club activities, parades, tours, relative activities that will not be used for general daily transportation, and also that the vehicle be titled in Wyoming. Upon receipt of the approved application and payment of the street rod special license fee, the vehicle shall be registered and special license plates issued therefore. The department shall issue a special street rod vehicle license plate of a size and design as prescribed by the department. The registration expires upon the transfer of ownership of the vehicle or upon the department's issuance of a new plate design. Now, this is a little different than the prestige plates, but the department may have rules and regulations to implement the provisions of that section. Now, we have a little changes in the equipment. On page 3, line 12, is unless the presence of the equipment was specifically required by the laws of the state as a condition of the sale for the year listed as the year of manufacture on the certificate of title, the presence of any specific equipment is not required for the operation of the vehicle, operation of a vehicle registered under this section. And later on, we'll get through in here, it'll be like one taillight. I had an old Chevy pickup that had one taillight, and Montana thought I should have two, and I told them that their 1956 pickup had two, 55 had one. And after I paid their fine, they agreed with me. Now, the custom vehicle is a little bit different. However, the paragraphs that explain the difference in how we handle those are virtually the same except for just a few exceptions. The custom vehicle should be registered and licensed pursuant to this section. And all the paragraphs on page 4 are the same as for the hot rod, so I won't relate those again. On page 5, down to line 11, the only different paragraph on a custom vehicle was manufactured prior to 1968 or was originally manufactured to have one license plate. A lot of foreign cars have those. A license plate shall only be required to be displayed on the rear of the vehicle if it only came out when it was new that had to have one plate. And then from 16 to 24 is all the same as the hot rod designations. And until we get on page 6 with the definitions, and that's where they describe the difference between a street rod and a custom vehicle. A street rod means a vehicle that is a 1948 or older vehicle, or the vehicle was manufactured after 1948 to resemble a vehicle manufactured before 1949. And those are the cars that are and pickups are quite popular to make hot rods out of, and that's why they're that. It's been altered from the manufacturer's original design or has a body constructed from non-original materials, which happens an awful lot in that industry. The custom vehicle means any motor vehicle that, on page 7, line 5, is at least 25 years old and of a model year after 1948 or was manufactured to resemble a vehicle of at least 25 years old and a model year after 1948, and has been altered from the manufacturer's original design or has a body constructed from non-original materials, and that's all the same. Then the display of the license plates on the rest of page 7 indicates the license plates will be conspicuously displayed and securely fastened, and the standard stuff on the license plates. On page 8, the miscellaneous fees that are involved in this bill would be for a street rod. The fee for should be collected for the instruments or privilege indicated of $30, and the same with the custom vehicle. Now, the tail lamps are a very special item when you're as old as I am, and you had when you were a kid when cars were like this. The blue dot taillights, we thought the world had come to an end when they outlawed those back in the 50s. I was but a child. For purposes of this subsection now, the blue taillight means a red lamp installed in the rear of a motor vehicle containing a blue or purple insert that is not more than 1 inch in diameter. And this is a big deal to these people, I'll tell you what. Anyway. Okay. On page 9, the special vehicle identification number, the changes we made in that paragraph were a vehicle that does not have a vehicle identification number present or an owner of a vehicle for which a Wyoming certificate of title has been issued or is required, then the owner of the vehicle can apply to the department and get a special vehicle identification number, because when you take stuff out of the junkyard and you put it together and make it look like a 46 Chevy, Sometimes you can't find the serial number on them, and they'll have to apply for a vehicle number. We did change the registration fee to get that special identification number to $20 for this special number. That is the bill in a nutshell. And
Senator Townsend, we do have a standing committee amendment. You or does Senator Von Flader want to move the standing committee amendment and explain it? Please read in the standing committee amendment.
House Bill number 2, Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 2, lines 7 through 11.
Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number, Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill number 2. That goes to page 2, line 7. This was to clean up the requirement on the original bill, page 2, lines 7 through 12, where they had 10 days from acquisition of the vehicle to, if it was roadworthy, to register it, or 10 days after it became roadworthy. Then you got into the discussion and debate about what's roadworthy. You also ran into a conflict with our sales tax. Somebody could show up 3 or 4 years later and say, well, I'm now ready, it's roadworthy, I'm ready to register it. And your local treasurer could say, well, you had 45 days to pay your sales tax, you're, you know, 398 days over that moment, so the fine is. So we just simplified it, and you add language that says, to register a street rod, the owner shall submit an application to the department indicating the following. So it's up to them to know the rules that you need to get in there when you, and at least pay your sales tax. And when you're ready to register it, you'd register it like any other vehicle. So that's page 2, lines 7 through 11, and once again, page 4, lines 7 through 11, they're identical. So it had to change in both places for both types of vehicle. Page 8, line 12, the committee felt that this is the fee they pay, the $30 for 8 years, whatever that divides out to, $4.25 a year, was a little bit, a good deal. It was a good deal for these people, so we raised it to $100. So because of the language in there, you pay this one-time fee until the department comes out with new plates. So if you buy it right away, when we first issue new plates, you'll have about 8 years. You buy it anywhere in between, you'd have that many years. If you bought it the day before and we came out with new plates on the next registration, you have your year or less. So we raised the fee from $30 to $100. And that's the amendment. Mr. Chairman, I'll stand for questions and ask for the question.
Questions on Senator Von Flader's motion to adopt a standing committee amendment to House Bill 2. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Back on the bill. House Bill... Senator Burns.
A couple of, a few questions. One comes probably completely out of ignorance. But isn't there already an antique or vintage car license plate that you can put on? And if it's, let's say, a 1948 Packard, can't you drive around with the original taillights and no seatbelts and all the original equipment that it had? So I'm kind of trying to figure out why we need this bill, especially the custom or hot rod, or street rod. I don't know if you want me to ask the questions one at a time. I've got three of them. I guess the other question is, other two questions are, on pages 2 and 4, lines 14 and 15, the owner has to have resided in Wyoming for at least 1 year. Why? Why does somebody have to have resided in the state for a year to register a vehicle? I've never seen that before, and I'm trying to figure out the point to that. Especially, as a matter of fact, some people have two houses, and they may be residents of another state, but they keep a house here. What difference does it make if they're a resident of the state or not? And also, just below that, line 17 through 20, the vehicles will be maintained for occasional transportation, exhibitions, club activities, parades, tours, so forth. If a policeman sees somebody driving down the road, how does he know that it's an occasional transportation as opposed to a regular transportation? And I'm wondering how the police are supposed to define between the two.
Senator Townsend.
Mr. Chairman, those are good questions, and I have answers to most of them. It so happens that I looked up the antique motor vehicle section 31.2.210, and most of the language that came
to this came from the antique motor vehicle section of the laws, and they had in there of the antique motor vehicles should be registered in licenses pursuant to this section. And an owner of an antique motor vehicle shall register the vehicle within 10 days of date of acquisition and all of that. And then it says the owner has resided in Wyoming for at least 1 year. Now, there was some discussion with the Attorney General about just that line, saying that it might be unconstitutional where you're defining this too narrowly or being a burden on a certain amount of the public, and I agree with that. I would think that if someone lost their job in Denver and wanted to come up to Wyoming and bring their car with them, they couldn't license that car for a year. It could be that on second reading we could come up with a amendment that would eliminate back to 3 months, which is what most of them are. But anyway, this was coded out of this antique motor vehicle section, and that's where that came from. Okay, the other question was... occasional transportation, exhibition, club activities, parades, tourism, the activity would not be used for general daily transportation. Now, this is Wyoming, and if I drove if I had this license plate on my 57 T-Bird and I drove it to work every day, I think the cops would know that I'm using it every day. That was also that restriction was also in the antique motor plate that came out of here, and what we're trying to do is make that toward what this is a show car. Some questions came up too about the. I'll answer the question before you ask: is why would you happen to? buy a plate like this and pay $100 on it, and then you would have a $50,000 car and pay the license plates fees based on a 48 Ford, for example. Well, my example would be that if I bought a 2002 Subaru and put $40,000 in it, that would be the same thing. That would be based on the price of that car the time you purchase that. If you sell this antique car or this custom hot rod for a lot of money, you still pay the sales tax on it, just like it was. And yes, it does go back down to the value of the car the year that it was registered at. But that all the questions that you had, or one more?
Senator Byrd, more questions.
Just a quick little question. Again, we're on Romanet 2, line 17 through 20. If the car is streetworthy and it's licensed for the street, why even have that? Why even include occasional transportation? If they've got a $40,000 car and they're dumb enough to drive the thing around every day in all weather conditions, frankly, that's their problem. I don't know why we should legislate against stupidity. I'm afraid we're setting up a standard that the police can't meet. Because what is occasional transportation and what is regular transportation? So I'm suggesting that if we're going to delete line 14 and 15, why not delete the whole thing? And I just want a reaction from the sponsor.
Senator Geis.
I think, as you remember, that plate is a one-time fee for $100 is what they told us in committee. And if you're using that every day driving back and forth to work, then you put a regular plate on that, and that's going to cost you quite a bit more money.
Further discussion. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got one comment and one question. The comment is several of the Pioneer plates here in Laramie County also have a regular plate so that they can drive it around and use it as an everyday vehicle, but they want it acknowledged it's a restored Pioneer vehicle. I would ask the sponsor about the comments from the County Clerks Association on this.
Is there any other pioneers want to talk on this? Senator von Fladen?
Yeah, I don't. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think I qualify as a pioneer, but and I hope we don't legislate stupidity. I hate to be outlawed. but I will say that the county clerks, treasurers, we didn't hear a word out of them. It was administratable. It's true, if you had a 62 car, it would boil down on its registration fees down to where probably less than what we're collecting on the $100. I can tell you I'm the only no vote in committee for a couple of reasons. One is I don't like specialty plates, and I think this just adds another one to it. That's page 3, lines 4 through 4, 5, and 6 talk about the department making specialty plates. $100 up to 8 years until they change out plates again. $100 seems very, very reasonable fee to me when you may have, as testimony said, $70,000 or $80,000 or $90,000 into one of these custom vehicles. And you won't pay, you'll pay sales tax if you have a shop do the work for you. But if you do the work or you buy it, possibly even buy it out of state and bring it in with some other proof of price, it's 1948, you know, I gave $82 at the junkyard for it, you'll pay appropriately that amount of sales tax. So I have a problem with the specialty plates, $100 for 8 years. And then, as the senator from Sheridan pointed out on page 2, lines 17 through 20, how do you tell what occasional use is? We're talking about car collectors as one group that would have this. And I would say the good senator from Crook County and or from, oh, did I say Crook County? From the Northeast. It would be in that car collectors. We see it. But you got to remember there was testimony over there in the House side committee on this about all the younger group that goes to a certain tech school in Laramie who also have these cars that would qualify and do and build them themselves and work on them constantly. They don't occasionally drive. So now are you getting a police officer arguing what occasional driving is and this younger person saying, well, yeah, I do take it occasionally to school. So I saw all sorts of issues. If they want to get the purple inset light, blue light, tail light, that's fine. If they want to get recognition of the serial number on the oldest component within the vehicle is what it's registered as, that's fine. We could write all that in there. But a specialty license plate, a reduced price to register it, and this occasional use idea, I don't think it's a great bill.
Discussion on House Bill 102. House Bill 2, the question being called for, the question is on Senator von Fladen's motion that House Bill 2 pass committee of the whole. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
House Bill 2 is passed committee of the whole. A division being called for. All in favor, please stand. All opposed, please stand. House Bill 2 is passed committee of the whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee of the whole beg leave to rise and set again in about 15 minutes.
We've all heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. We will reset here in about 15 minutes. 106.
Aye.
House Bill number 6, sponsored by the Travel Committee, Game and Fish Trapping, an act relating to game and fish. It was referred to Committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Cole, Dockstader, Jennings, and Sessions, Senator Burns, Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 6, Game and Fish Trapping. There are no standing committee amendments, and there are no appropriations on the bill. And for further explanation of the bill, I ask that you call on one of the two bearded senators from Natrona County. I don't really care which one.
To the bearded senator, Senator Jennings from Natrona County.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What we have here is a trapping bill.
Thanks, Mike.
And I think, if I remember right, the biggest reason that we're bringing this before you is that we have some new technology out there. So if you see on top of page 2, it says, Commission, following consultation with other affected entities, may promulgate rules and regulations establishing specifications for snares, breakaway weights, location of breakaway devices, loop size, and anchors for trapping and snaring of fur-bearing and predatory animals. And, Mr. Chairman, as you go down through there, you'll see in line 20, they've taken out in addition and made it all snares used for taking of fur-bearing animals. And then if you look on 22, they've taken out locking and made it a breakaway device. And then they went on and struck that's designated to release 250 pounds of pressure. That's all gone because it's gone back to the breakaway devices rather than the how much weight that the trap can hold. And it goes into the steel jawed leg holds. Shall be checked, took out excluding snares for fur-bearing animals and all that, so that all the traps now, if they have steel jaw leg holds, you have to go check them every 72 hours, unless you're granted an extension by the department, which could be a snowstorm, catastrophe, some reason that you legitimately couldn't get out there and call the department and say, I got my snares out. Can't get to them. They can tell you that's okay. Go when the snow's gone or whatever. All snares and quick kill body devices are checked once a week. And you go over to page 4. You can look at this that we've changed a little bit of language there, that we've any landowner or his agent may inspect any trap or snare set on his property. And instead of comma, may remove the trap or snare, and may release or release or remove from the trap a snare of any wildlife which has not been taken lawfully. Then it goes on to say that the landowner or his agent shall, and we strict immediately, notify the department of any such wildlife, excluding predators, and strict prior to and put in as soon as practically possible after removing the wildlife from a trap or snare. A lot of this went back to the most of the time the property owner is going to call Game and Fish anyway, say, I've got this, come help me let it loose if it's illegal. And then if they don't, they tell them just go ahead and do it themselves anyway. And then you see the renumbering after that. And, Mr. Chairman, I believe that's about it. Pretty simple. The biggest reason for this is because of some of the new trapping technology and then just how often you have to check it. Mr. Chairman, I'd hope you'd vote yes on this. If you have any questions, stand for it.
Discussion on House Bill 6. Ready for the question? Questions on Senator Burns' motion to House Bill 6 pass Committee of the Whole? Senator Scott.
Chairman, I have had some experience with these things, having at least once had to rescue the family dog from a snare that was set by some lowlife on our place. Is this bill going to change the protection, any protections that are available for such animals so that you have a chance to rescue your dog? And number two, I know in our place we don't permit trapping for predatory animals, particularly coyotes. We think that's likely to do more harm than good. And I see an exception in here for being able to remove predatory animals from snares. Any comments on that? Why isn't that a matter of the landowner's option?
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, in the case of a landowner such as the previous speaker, who doesn't allow the traps or snares on his property in the first place, he's not going to have any snares or traps. So I don't know why that would arise. This is only for those landowners who have allowed it. And if you look on page 4, it actually gives more leeway to the landowner if he finds such wildlife that was not planned for the trap or snare. Say it was put in for predatory animals before he had to immediately notify Game and Fish. Now, the new language would say he has to notify Game and Fish as soon as possible after he's already released the wildlife. It allows him to go ahead and release it and then notify as soon as it's practically possible is the language of the bill. As far as predatory animals, the reason a lot of snares and traps are out there are for the predatory animals in the first place. As I said, if the landowner has allowed the snares and traps there for the predatory animals in the first place, then he shouldn't be letting them go. As far as his own dog goes, of course he can let it go.
Senator Scott?
The problem is snares and traps that are placed on property without permission.
Senator Jennings?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that probably would be carried, would be addressed in other statutes, probably around the trespass laws rather than on the trapping laws.
Questions on Senator Burns' motion to House Bill 6 pass Committee of the Whole? All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. House Bill 6 pass Committee of the Whole. Next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 10. The reading clerk will read in the House bill.
House Bill Number 10, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, Subdivision Requirements and Act Relating to Subdivisions. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is a bill about subdivisions. It's called Subdivision Requirements. There was a fairly extensive amendment offered in committee, and it led to what I think better way to present it as a substitute bill. So I'd ask that the Standing Committee amendment be read at this time. And
the reading clerk, please read the Standing Committee amendment.
House Bill Number 10, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engrossed copy. That substitute number 1 be substituted for House Bill 10, and that substitute number 1 do pass.
Senator Case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I would move Senate Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 10, and I'd like to work off the amendment, which, of course, is a substitute bill, and I'll describe in the bill how the changes are from the original bill as it came through. Mr. Chairman, just first a little bit of an overview. Probably the major thing that this bill does is allow someone that is developing a subdivision to actually enter into contracts with folks to sell lots in the subdivision contingent on whether or not the subdivision is subsequently approved. Right now you can't do that. And so what this would actually allow is you to get buyers and sellers together and maybe really see if there's enough interest to make the subdivision go forward. And that's fairly specifically regulated, and we'll talk about that as we go through. But that's probably the most major thing about this bill. The other things about this bill are that it does allow the county commissioners to put in some more requirements, including potentially requiring an entity to be responsible for the overall maintenance of the subdivision. Whether that's a homeowners association or something similar, we'll get to that.
Senator Case, you want to vote on the standing committee amendment so we can work off the new bill?
Well, I was going to get a vote at the end, if that's all right, Mr. Chairman.
Either way, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to go through the amendment, and which is the substitute bill, and then we're kind of on the whole darn thing. So, Mr. Chairman, on your first page, the only thing that is new to this first page, of course, from the engrossed copies that came over from the other side, was lines 8 and 9, where it says, providing an exception to qualify certain parcels as agricultural land for taxation purposes. Y'all recall we had the other bill in here that was called cluster subdivisions or cluster developments, and we dealt with the tax issue regarding agricultural land. This is to treat the tax issue as similar to what we did in that other bill. And so you can see that led to the creation of a new Section 1, which is on the bottom of page 1 and down to line 10 on page 2. That language mirrors what we did on, it was called House Bill 9, and it was cluster subdivisions or cluster development. Mr. Chairman, Section 2 is largely the same as the engrossed copy with an exception about the entity that or homeowners association. But in Section 2, you can see that the definition on lines 21 and 22, the definition of the word sell is changed. So it says sell or sale includes sale as evidenced by the delivery of a deed, contract for deed, lease, assignment, auction, or award by lottery. If you go to the next page, it says sell or sale does not include a contract to sell, which is expressly contingent upon the recording of the final plat by the county clerk. So that definition means it's not considered a sale if it's a contingent contract based on recording of the contract with the county or the plat with the county clerk. We're going to come to what that means later. In terms of the standing committee amendment and the substitute bill, in the committee, we added back the word lease on page 23 or page 2, line 23. That had been taken out in the bill as it came over from the House, the other body. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. In addition, in this section, the standing committee on lines 4 through 10 added all that language. And it's a little bit of a modifier to where the funds are held when this contract for deed occurs. And it requires that all the funds paid by the buyer under the contract are escrowed with a financial institution located in Wyoming or a title company licensed to do business in the state, and that these funds are escrowed until the final plat is recorded and the seller tenders the deed or the or there's another reason that it's that can stop the escrow. That's if the buyer and the seller agree that they don't want to do this anymore. So basically it says we're going to escrow these funds until the plat's recorded or we agree to call the deal off. That came out of your Senate Standing Committee amendment. The rest of that page is all the same as it came over from the other side. It does the bill does define a water system, including a water supply system used for irrigation and stock water. And you can see that's just mostly a rewrite of the language on lines 19 and 20 on page 3. Page 4, Mr. Chairman. And you can see, this is the guts of the bill right here, Mr. Chairman, under 185304, subdivision permit required. It says at the top of the page, page 4, no person shall sell land subject to subdivision regulation under this article, record a plat, or commence construction of a subdivision without first obtaining a subdivision permit. But remember, back when we defined sell does not include a contingent contract. So you can sell. You can have a contract contingent on it being ultimately approved, and so you're not violating the law if you have that contingency. It permits that contingency, permits a developer to ascertain whether there's any interest in the subdivision, maybe get some money together, figure out if it's worth going ahead, as opposed to having to wait for everything to be finished before he can sell any lots. 185306 is the minimum requirements for the subdivision permits. This is the one where the board, and this is the Board of County Commissioners, everybody, they can require this entity that's down lines 21 on into the next page on page 4. They can require evidence that all parcels of land created by the subdivision will be subject to written and recorded covenants or other instruments creating an entity, and it used to say homeowners association, Mr. Chairman, we changed it to an entity, binding on subsequent owners of the land within the subdivision. The entities that may be used include, but are not limited to, a special improvement district, homeowners association, mutual benefit company, a corporation, and the board shall not mandate the creation of an entity with the ability to interfere with any owner's ability to use his private property except to collect any assessment. The entity shall have the ability to address the following topics. Now, almost everything in that paragraph, ladies and gentlemen, is from the standing committee. As the bill came to us, it only allowed for a homeowners association. And so we allowed for the Mutual Benefit Society and the other entities. And we also said you can't interfere with private property rights except to the extent defined in A and B. Now, it doesn't mean you couldn't have an entity that has lots of covenants and everything like some of them do, but the board can't require that. The board can only require, with respect to starting on line 9, requirements with respect to maintenance and responsibility for common areas, roads and water supply systems, and assessments against all parcels of land in the subdivision to defray the cost thereof, and line 14, continued management of the entity. That's what the board can require. It doesn't mean you can't do more if you want to, if they voluntarily do that. Line 16 through 21 is, there were some provisions deleted, by the way, by your standing committee, and this was in the area where this was much more extensive and much more invasive in terms of people's property rights. It had all sorts of things about dispute resolution, which we took out, and designating persons to be responsible. All that was removed from the bill, and so this was sort of homeowners association / entity light, Mr. Chairman. Finally, Section E there, little e, is the same as it came over from the other body. It just gives a little bit of a warning about the mineral estate, Mr. Chairman, and that's consistent with what we did last year in the large subdivision bill that we passed. Lines 185309 is about the permit fee. You can see that at the top of the page, instead of a specific fee, we're allowing them to assess a reasonable fee not to exceed the cost of processing the application, and they're credited to the county's general fund. There's a penalty provision, Mr. Chairman. We took the original bill took out language here. We didn't mess in this area in the standing committee. Let me just look at that for 1 second. It's actually a simplification of that section, Mr. Chairman. We took out the language, and any person who is an agent for a subdivisor, developer, or owner of subdivided land offers for sale. Remember that we are allowing contingent sales where that's contingent on the property later being platted and approved. So what this is a violation for selling a lot before it's approved. Well, that's exactly what the purpose of the bill is to allow for these contingent sales so that we can't have that penalty there. That's the reason that's gone. Mr. Chairman, 185316 is requirements for large acre subdivision permits, and this is mirror language, Mr. Chairman, to what we put in the previous section. So it's just identical all the way through. The same changes from the bill as it came over from the other entity. I guess there are homeowners association down the hall there, but the other entity at the other end of this building. Finally, Mr. Chairman, because we did bring in the tax issue into this bill, on the bottom of page 7, line 24, you can see we're bringing in the Title 39 statute, which is a tax statute, which is about the imposition of the agricultural land classification or basis for tax. And you can see the new language here, lines 12 through 15. It says that the land is not part of a platted subdivision. except for a parcel of land 140 acres or more, which otherwise qualifies as agricultural land. That's very consistent with House Bill 9 as it came out of your Senate committee. It's not consistent. The 140 acres is not consistent with how this that House Bill 9 left this body, because, as you recall, we amended in the area to deal with parcels down to 35 acres. And if you look ahead, you'll see that there might be a committee of the whole amendment in that area. Section 3, Mr. Chairman, deals with the effective date. You can see, for tax purposes, we're making the effective date January 1st. Everything else in the book, in the bill, is effective July 1. I'd be happy to answer any questions. That really explains the substitute bill, and I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
The questions on the Standing Committee Amendment to adopt the substitute bill. All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The substitute bill has been adopted. Back on the bill, back on House Bill 10. We do have a Committee of the Whole Amendment. Would the reading clerk please read the Committee of the Whole Amendment?
House Bill 10, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Substitute Bill Number 1, page 2, line 4.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. Chairman, the Senate will recall that we had the same tax issue in the previous House Bill 9. My co-sponsor on the amendment persuaded the Senate that 35 acres was a better dividing point than 140, and I bring this amendment to make the Senate's position consistent in the two bills. I would urge adoption. I would be happy to answer any questions, but I don't see any need to repeat the debate we had there.
The questions on the standing or Committee of the Whole Amendment to House Bill 10. All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The Committee of the Whole Amendment has been adopted. Back on the bill. Further discussion on House Bill 10. You ready for the question? Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, not being privileged to all the conversations surrounding this, on page 5 and again on page 7, where you say the board, this is the County Commissioner Board, shall not mandate the creation of an entity with the ability to interfere with any owner's ability to use his private property. So what happens, how does that interact with your zoning laws that a county commission has created? Tell me how that interacts with that. Do we throw out the zoning laws, or are there, does this take precedent over a county's zoning laws, or what's the deal?
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'll try to do it. Good job of answering that. This is where the board mandates, in essence, a homeowners association or other entity to ongoingly take care of the subdivision. Now, that's a permissive thing that we're giving county commissioners. They may mandate the creation of such a entity in terms of getting the subdivision approved. However, they can't go farther. They can't mandate that that entity, for example, interfere with any other forms of private property rights. It doesn't say that there can't, that the entity can't do that. It just says that the county commissioners can't mandate the interference with the property rights. Maybe we should.
Mr. Chairman, and there's no interaction then, therefore, with the zoning. That's an entirely separate governmental activity. This is question is, can they mandate a private organization that's going to, you know, tell you you can't build on your house and all that sort of thing? We're saying, no, they can't. You can still privately agree to such a thing. It just the county can't, commissioners can't tell you you have to have such an organization. They can tell you you can have an organization to take care of the common areas and raid the roads and plow the roads and that sort of thing.
Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, let's talk about horses. When you, this is in my county, when you have a subdivision on some of the areas outside of our town, and within that, and the county commissioners, you know, are trying to bring some reason to what size of plots, what size of everything that you have to have horses on, there are entities out there that you cannot have a horse on. You can't have those kinds of animals because of interference with an acre. And now this is not, and this is large plots. So how does this interfere? If a county says we're going to limit the use of this or anything that they put into their zoning, and then you have something like this in place, then tell me what, I assume state law takes precedence over zoning. Am I right? So then this says county commissioners can't do that. On a whole,
Senator Cooper.
Chairman, the zoning rules and laws still come into play regardless of what, I guess, to the good senator from Laramie County, we're saying kind of in this bill that the commissioners cannot pass on that authority to any homeowners association or any kind of entity and say, you know, you can't play on the property, private property rights of those owners. But that does not preclude the county from making rules and regs in zoning to zone out certain things or to do certain things on property within a subdivision. Those should have came in play a long time before that subdivision even came into existence. And if they aren't, they still have the authority to do that later on, to zone or to do comprehensive land planning or whatever they want to do. So that's pretty much it. The idea here is just to not let the homeowners associations or whatever the entity happens to be called, mutual beneficial associations, kind of walk all over the landowners there and say, but the county still has that authority for zoning that area.
Senator Case.
Chairman, just one last stab at this. This is about when you go to get a permit for a subdivision, okay? And you go in there, and we have 23 counties, and we happen to go to one that says, you know, from now on, when you come in for a permit for a subdivision, we're going to require you to have a homeowners association. That's our rule, or other entity that meets the requirements. You know, and you have to have one of those, or we're not going to grant your permit. And that association has to do a minimum of two things. And that's maintenance and responsibility for common areas, roads and water supply systems, and assessments against all parcels of land to defray the cost thereof. That's your common area, your road stuff. And your association also has to have some kind of an arrangement by which it continues into the future. That's all we're going to require. We're not going to require blue houses. We're not going to require red houses. We're not going to require any of that as a condition for getting your subdivision permit. So it's done. However, you know, we have zoning in this county, and we have some pretty specific zoning requirements. So when you actually develop your property, you're going to have to follow our zoning. Everybody's going to have to follow our zoning, but that's in a different area. That doesn't have anything to do with me handing the developer the permit, and he handed me proof that he's formed this entity to do those two simple things, continue in existence and to maintain the common areas. And you know what? A county, it's an option. A county doesn't have to do that. And they can have full board zoning and do all that and not require the association to get a permit. But it is another tool for counties, and they do support it. But it doesn't undo anything else in our zoning or other kinds of statutes.
Senator Nicholas.
Questions. First, with respect to the language of page 5, line 5, and it repeats it later, and it says that the board shall not mandate the creation of an entity with the ability to interfere with the owner's ability to use his private property. You know, by very nature, if a common area, you own an undivided interest in the common area, that's part of your private property, and yet you're interfering with the use. If there's a road that goes through your property that has an easement for the subdivision, which is often the case where you would be mandating, if you would own it, it would be subject to an easement, and then you'd still be required to maintain it. I'm wondering if the committee discussed on that language whether you have a contradiction in the fact that by the very nature, some of these covenants will, in fact, reduce or impair or impose obligations on your private property. I'm assuming you're talking about the lot that remains not subject to any common areas, but the language itself, I see a contradiction, and maybe you've discussed it, and I'm missing something.
Senator Scott?
I don't think there's any contradiction here, because things like easements and covenants about the use of the private property, they're not imposed by this homeowners association or whatever special improvement district or whatever you have. They're part of the original deal, and this language doesn't constrain that. It would constrain the association from imposing any new requirements. But the purpose of the association that's mandated is set forth. You really got to look at lines 9 through 12, where you're trying to get somebody to pay for these public type services so they don't come back on the county. And that's what the aim is here. I don't think there's any contradiction, because those other requirements are imposed as part of the deal. Now, you can go ahead, if you want to, and create a homeowners association that can tell you you can't put up a flagpole and you can't build an addition on your house and all those things. But the county can't tell you you have to have such an organization.
Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, I do see the good senator from Albany County's point, and it's certainly not meant to be any conflict, but we might suggest a second or third reading amendment that would be something like, the board shall not mandate the creation of an entity with the ability to interfere with any owner's ability to use its private property except to the extent of A and B below, and then accept to collect any assessment. I mean, if you want to be perfectly clear, that would be the committee's intent, and I'm sure we could look favorably on something like that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nicholas.
If we would have more discussion on the need for the language at subparagraph E on page 5 with the bold notation. And my principal concern is that a lot of these contracts you end up turning over to your bank, and it becomes the basis for financing. And while it may or may not be that this is a restriction, when you buy your home in a town, you get your title insurance, you see these exceptions, you may not understand it. But as you bold them out, oftentimes they impair your ability to go get in financing, because when you start talking about secondary mortgages, things like that, they don't understand this language. It may or may not always be the case that it's accurate, but I would like to have some discussion on what the purpose is.
Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, I think that actually mirrors the language from the large acre subdivision bill that we passed last year, which, if you recall, was largely a consumer protection bill. And it had lots of deals about when you're selling this property, you put in that there's no central water supply, there's no such and such. And I believe I've got the engrossed copy of last year's bill, and I can't find the exact reference to the mineral estate, but I'm sure it's in here, and it was from last year. So it was an attempt to make that match for the large acre subdivisions, this new bill, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nicholas?
Chairman, I would take a look back there. I think there are some differences between subdivisions where you're going to go build a house and the large acres, which you build houses, but it's a different kind of financing, oftentimes different kind of process. But we at least have to be aware that as you on a lot of these consumer-type transactions where you're trying to get financing for, and you take your contracted deed in to get your construction loans, and the bank starts looking at it and they see a bold statement like that, sometimes it makes it harder to get a construction loan to move forward. So we just have to be aware of that, notwithstanding that when you get your title insurance, there's going to be exceptions to that. So as long as you've addressed it, you know it's not going to be a problem. I'd just like to know. Over on page 6, on penalties, you've taken out language that was previously there that created a penalty for agents, realtors, others to go out and violate the terms of the act. And, you know, I've had instances in my career where the people that were really violating it were, in fact, the people who were out peddling the land, marketing the land, So I'm wondering why, and maybe it's I'm missing something, but why the deletion there?
Senator Case?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, first on the issue about the mineral estate, that is identical language to what was passed last year. And you may argue that it's not necessarily appropriate for these non-large lot subdivisions, and we can have that discussion, but it is identical language from last year. And with reference to the penalties, remember the purpose of this bill is to allow for these contingent sales that occur prior to the subdivision being platted. That's really what we're doing. And we had lots of testimony in the interim. This is an interim committee bill where people said came in and said, you know, it's just getting too hard. Counties are take too long. The permitting process is too extensive, too. And, you know, we agreed with them. And we tried to get a little balance by saying, you know, a person trying to do this development ought to be able to have an arrangement by where they can say, I'm starting this subdivision. It's not platted yet. It hasn't been approved by the county. But if you'd like to, buy it, contingent on it being approved, there's no reason to prohibit that transaction. So that's why that language is taken out that says any person who is an agent or a subdivider, offers for sale any subdivided lands without it first being approved. So, yes, indeed, you can offer for sale. That's pretty much the whole purpose of the bill, but it's very restricted. And you can see that we actually got a little scared of that, and we added language that said when you offer it for sale, the money has to be escrowed in an entity that's controlled in Wyoming, and that so that if this thing doesn't go through, we at least know that the money's there and the buyer, the contingent buyer, can get their money back. So it's a balance of regulation, consumer protection, free market. That's where we came out. And that was the whole purpose of the bill, basically.
Questions on Senator Case's motion that House Bill 10 pass Committee of the Whole. All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. House Bill 10 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 26. The reading clerk, please read the House Bill.
House Bill number 26, sponsored by Representative Buchanan, Circuit Court Magistrate Jurisdiction, an act relating to Circuit Court Magistrates. It was referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with the due pass recommendation on House Bill 26. This is a good piece of legislation that really addresses only one lay magistrate in the state of Wyoming, and that happens to be over in Platte County. You'll see that what this bill does is that it says that at the direction of the circuit court judges of the circuit, a full-time magistrate of a circuit court who is not authorized to practice law, that's a lay magistrate. And there happens to be one that sits in Platte County. And what they're finding over there, this is the last one, but you okay?
No.
Okay. Where was I? Platte County. So what happens with this particular lay magistrate is that when they come in to try to handle some of these misdemeanor cases and so forth for the circuit court, they find out that sometimes he can't even hear or sentence the case, and then they have to delay the process and bring in another. Bring over a circuit court judge or whatever, and so all this bill does is allow that lay magistrate to deal with approximately 20 to 30 misdemeanors that have longer than original sentences under our original kinds of misdemeanor cases, which are normally $750, 6 months. What this bill does says it's going to allow them to handle those cases, allow that person to sentence up to 1 year to fine over and above the $750 pursuant to the statute, whatever it is, that the there are a number of our crimes that misdemeanor crimes where we allow the sentence or the probation longer than the term of 1 year. This will allow that magistrate to do that also, and it allows that magistrate to also hear cases involving peace bonds, stalking, and domestic violence. And so this just makes it a little bit more efficient for this one lay magistrate. When this lay magistrate's gone, it will be gone. But we only have a few full-time magistrates and only one lay full-time magistrate.
Discussion on House Bill 26. Questions on Senator Ross's motion that House Bill 26 pass committee of the whole. All in favor of the motion, say aye. Opposed, nay. House Bill 26 is passed committee of the whole. The next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 16. The reading clerk, please read the House bill.
House Bill number 16, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee, Cottage Food Industry, an act relating to food safety. It was referred to Committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Jennings, Johnson, and Vasey. Excuse Senator Geis. Senator Geis, Chairman.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move that House Bill 16 do pass, and I also like to have the Standing Committee read in.
Reading clerk, please read the Standing Committee Amendment.
House Bill 16, Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 1, line 8.
Mr. Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment number 16 to House Bill 16, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Johnson to explain the bill.
Senator Johnson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 16 came about from a statewide problem at farmers markets. I know when I was campaigning last summer and farmers markets were going on in Cheyenne, I was getting hammered out there by people who go to the farmers market to sell items. And I checked on it, and their complaints were right. Citizens were not allowed to sell food made at home because they don't have professional kitchens. What's a professional kitchen? It's all metal. Large ranges, stacked multiple ovens, large dishwashing machines, et cetera, et cetera. You know what a professional kitchen is. You've gone into restaurants and seen what they are. My church has a professional kitchen, for instance. The Ag Department is responsible for the inspections and enforcement of current statute. Unfortunately, those who were out there enforcing the statutes don't make the statutes. They just have to enforce it. And I'm not sure they liked it either, but they had to. Current law does not pertain to nonprofits such as church bazaars, Boy Scout cake sales, club bake sales, etc., etc., etc. Now, Cheyenne has two farmers markets, and they both have had problems, and I've had complaints by people who go to both of them and sell. So going through House Bill 16, page 2 has definitions added to the statute. Function means any official ceremony or organized social occasion. You think that's pretty vague? You bet that's pretty vague. A function is a function. If you decide it's a function, it must be. Not potentially hazardous food means any food which does not require time or temperature control for safety to limit pathogenic microorganism growth or toxin formation. The natural pH or the final pH of acidified food must be 4.6 or less. Mr. Chairman, I think you ought to vote for that just because I was able to read it right. That means if it's raw and dangerous, cook it. Very simple. And then we have a third definition that I can talk about at this time that's on the amendment where we decided maybe we ought to define what a farmer's market is. And Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has that. Farmers market means a common facility or area where several vendors may gather on a regular reoccurring basis to sell a variety of fresh fruit and vegetables, locally grown farm products, and other items directly to the consumers. If you think other items is vague, that has been done on purpose because that could mean anything cooked, that could mean handicrafts, that could mean about anything. And when you go to your standard farmer's market, boy, there's a lot of wonderful stuff out there that you can spend your money on and enjoy. And then the rest of the amendment is simply renumbering. 357-124, as soon as I get to my notes. Boy, there's a lot of paper up here. On page 2, line 17, we change for wholesale or retail use to simple sale. I mean, you're selling it. Let's uncomplicate that. Over on page 3, an initial license fee of $100 shall accompany each application. The license fee for a temporary food event shall be $25. That's been replaced by language, new language, that's later on down there. So is line 17 through 21. It's putting them both right there together. And the new language reads, the director, the Department of Ag director, shall establish license categories and fees by rule, and no fee shall exceed $100. That's getting away from micromanaging. And this is a license to cook food from the Department of Agriculture. Page 4 is the real meat of the bill. It adds new language taking farmers' markets, roadside stands, private homes, and any function to those not covered by A on page 2. The deleted language is replaced by the definition on page 2. Thereby, the farmers' markets, you can go to a farmers' market and you can buy bread. You can, mostly your breads, that type of thing that they sell there that is entirely safe, that they can cook in their homes, and there will be no problems with. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I stand ready for questions.
Senator Johnson, shall we deal with the Standing Committee Amendment? It's been moved. On the Standing Committee Amendment, any comments on the Standing Committee Amendment? You ready for the question? Questions on Senator Geis's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment to House Bill 16. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. It's been adopted. Back on the bill. Discussion on the bill. The questions on Senator Geis's motion, House Bill. Senator Scott.
The provision on the pH requirement 4.6 or less, so it has to be pretty acidic. Why is that there? What would be the effect of removing that requirement and just going the language above that it isn't going to be hazardous? And does that requirement apply to these other items that are on page 4?
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, that was put in there at the request of the Department of Agriculture for the safety of people who are purchasing items from farmers markets. And that's why we put it in there. That's what, as far as taking it off, I don't know. I really don't. If they feel that that should be there for the safety of people going to farmers markets, I think that it deserves to be to stay there.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I go through there, all licensing comes from the Department of Agriculture. Is there means of those of us out in the faraway lands maybe to get a permit, or does everything have to come through Cheyenne? Is question number one. Number two is, in your bill here, what is the definition of local?
Any discussion on that? Senator Vasey.
I think that there are regional inspectors, food inspectors.
Senator Vasey, there we go. Yeah.
There are regional food inspectors. I don't know how close they're located to Teton County, but I'm sure there's one within driving distance. Or you can go to Idaho. No, there are regional. I think the idea of this was to streamline this so you could have these farmer markets, and so they're there. And I'm sorry, the second part of that question was what?
Oh, locally grown. What's your definition of local?
Well, I would say that's fairly broad because in the mother county, we have one in the county seat, and they sell tomatoes and things like that. And I don't think they're really closely that grown. I think they might be growing like in northern Colorado. But I think it's those. It allows, I think, in a county like this or in other counties, that fairly regional would be a description of that. So,
any other farmers want to comment, Senator Burns?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's actually a good question. Would that be within state? Because we've got, for instance, it sounds silly, but we've got a Hutterite community just north of us over the Montana line, and they make some of the best. They grow some of the best vegetables this side of Mississippi.
Senator Vasey.
Mr. Chairman, and I think that's right. I think it's the market is local, but I think what on those that communities that border something, I don't. It's not interstate commerce. I think that would be a logical conclusion that they could bring those in. I don't think that the intent of the Department of Ag was to get that involved. So I don't think we've limited those type of vendors to come to local food market. That it was not the intent of the bill, I don't.
Questions on Senator Geis's motion that House Bill 16 pass Committee of the Whole. All in favor of the motion say aye. Opposed nay. House Bill 16 pass Committee of the Whole. Next House bill for our consideration, House Bill 22. The reading clerk, please read the House bill.
House Bill number 22, sponsored by Representative Illoway, Qualifications for Veterans Tax Exemption, an act relating to veterans' property tax exemption. It was assigned to Committee number 3, Revenue, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Senator Schiffer.
Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole Rise and Report do so with a favorable reaction to House Bill 22, Qualification for Veterans Exemption. And to explain this good little bill, I'll turn it over to the sponsor, Senator Larson from Teton County.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All this bill does is say that if you have initially contacted the county treasurer from last year's, that now all you have to do is call them to renew that veteran's exemption. You know, many of the veterans don't have necessarily the ability to get around very often, and it can be kind of a burden for them to have to go and go into the assessor's office. And all this does is that you can call after first establishing your eligibility for that program, that you can then call the assessor on the phone and say that you would like to take advantage of that once again. That's all the bill does, by telephone or other communication method, on or before the fourth Monday in the day, verifying the same thing. What that does is eliminates the need for those veterans who it's kind of a burden to get into the assessor's office, particularly those where the assessor's office may be a long ways away. to have to personally go into the assessor's office and allows them to do that by telephone. That's all the bill does, and I urge your approval.
Discussion on House Bill 22. The motion's on Senator Schiffer's motion, and House Bill 22 passed Committee of the Whole. All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. House Bill 22 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 35. The reading clerk, please read the House bill.
House Bill number 35, Election Judges, sponsored by Representative Millen, an act relating to elections. It was sent to Committee number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, Hastert, Johnson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the do pass recommendation on House Bill 35, Election Judges. Mr. Chairman, there are no amendments. All this bill does, Mr. Chairman, is to take and allow for election judges to work part of the day. That's the gist of it. It was through last year, and the county clerks had a little bit of issues with it, and those issues have all been smoothed out. Everybody supports it. County Clerks Association testified for it. The need for the bill is that it's kind of getting hard to fill election judges, and this gives a little bit more flexibility. A clerk may allow for election judges to work part of the day. In the old days, you worried that somebody would, like, keep a running tab of the election and then run out and call up a bunch of friends and maybe drum up some more votes. That doesn't seem to be as relevant today because no one can really keep track of the voting because you use the reader machine. And I guess you could keep track of who's there and who's not, but everybody has cell phones and they could go into the restroom, and it just, this whole thing about requiring someone to work the entire day doesn't seem to make sense anymore. There was no testimony against the bill. That's all it does is allow them to work basically part shifts.
Questions on Senator Case's motion that House Bill 35 pass Committee of the Whole. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. House Bill 35 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next House bill for our consideration is House Bill 48. The reading clerk, please read the House bill.
House Bill number 48, sponsored by Representative Brown, Game Bird Farms Raising Sage Grouse, an act relating to game and fish. It was referred to Committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Code, Dockstader, Jennings, and Session, Senator Burns, Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 48. There are no standing committee amendments, and for a further explanation of the bill, I would ask that you turn to the other senator from Natrona County.
Senator Other. Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bring to you a bill that's been called many things, but I'm one of the few can admit that this is the Cover Jennings's budget amendment without a date bill. And all this does is take the budget amendment we put on last year that said that the Game and Fish Commission shall develop the rules, regulations, and procedures to raise sage grouse and private bird farms for release. And we all know the story of that, what happened. And this is a good little bill that comes in and sets some dates on it. We've already, on the new budget footnote, we've already gone to this date. So it just basically says that we'll get a report back from Game and Fish Commission by August 31st regarding the development of the rules. And then from that, we can go to decide whether or not we want to do legislation. Mr. Chairman, right now it says the committee shall sponsor. I believe there's an amendment for that, and I'd like to have that read in. And
there's a committee of the whole amendment, but it's not yours.
It's not mine. Well, let's do that one.
Senator Burns, you want to deal with the Committee of the Whole amendment?
Mr. Chairman, he tried to steal my amendment. Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 48 as the...
excuse me, Senator Burns, can we get it read in first?
Oh, okay.
Reading clerk, read the amendment.
House Bill 48, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 2, line 3.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, all it does is change the word shall to may, and we're referring to the TRW committee once it's received the report with the amendment. The committee may bring legislation, not shall.
Discussion on the amendment. The motion's on the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. House Bill 48, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Back on the bill. Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, that's the bill, so when the report comes back, we may or may not have legislation on it. I think this does clean up the lack of the date on the last year's budget amendment, and I would hope that you would vote aye for it, stand for questions. One question I've been asked, Mr. Chairman, no, the eggs that I had in the starter kit have not hatched.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. And, you know, I guess a little discussion. Going to the lines 3 through 6 on page 2, I mean, I appreciate the change that says the committee may sponsor legislation as it determines appropriate. Once again, folks, we had the discussion before, and that is, what's the role of management council to make decisions as what is the most important item of the committee? And I think ultimately it has to be an assigned topic by management council before you begin to sponsor a committee bill. And to be passing bills through, essentially to require or allow a committee to decide what they're going to do and before the entire body has assessed what the committee's requests are and what the management council deems are the appropriate priorities, I wonder if it is an appropriate thing for us to do, to essentially set an agenda before, without knowing all those facts.
Discussion? Discussion on House Bill 48. The motion is on Senator Burns' motion that House Bill 48 pass Committee of the Whole. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. House Bill 48 is passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 75. Reading clerk, please read the House Bill.
House Bill number 75, sponsored by Representative Brown, Subdivisions Water Supply Study and Act Relating to Subdivisions. It was referred to Committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Jennings, Johnson, and Vasey. Senator Geis, Chairman.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move that House Bill 75 do pass, and there's a standing committee amendment. I'd like to have that read in.
Reading clerk, please read the standing committee amendment.
House Bill number 75, standing committee amendment number 1, page 3, line 8.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, I would move standing committee to House Bill 75, and all we did on the standing in the committee was change parcels to subdivision on all the different lines you see on the amendment, not ask for a vote on that.
Discussion on the standing committee amendment. All in favor of the motion that the standing committee amendment be adopted, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. That amendment is adopted. Back on the bill.
What this bill does is the subdivision water supplies, it just gives the county commissioners another tool related to subdivision, providing modification requirement for groundwater studies for subdivisions and providing for effective debt. And we're going into Wyoming Statute 18-5316, requiring for large acreage subdivision permits. And it'll just give the county, because it says may regulate or elect to apply the provisions of this article or uniform base to sale or disposition of any land where the subdivision creates parcels that are 35 acres or larger, up to 140 acres. And the main part is that mostly old through on page 2, and you get over on page 3, is we're talking about a centralized water supply system proposed on these parcels, a study evaluating the water supply system and propose an adequate and safe to the system. And then we go on down to line 19, individual on lot wells are proposed, and under little I, the study under subparagraph A of this paragraph shall not be required, and the word no, proposed central water system. And then we go over on page 4, under 2 little I, the board may require a study related to the potential availability and quality of groundwater proposed within the subdivision, which may consist of new data, existing data, or other working wells in the area, or other data include drilling logs for a test well drilled within the proposed parcels or parcels indicated soil types, depth, quality, and quality of the water proposed in this test well. Then we go down line 13 under B. The board may require any of the following information to be submitted with the application for a subdivision permit. Then on line 17 under Roman numeral 6, a study evaluate the water supply system proposed for the subdivision, the adequacy and safety of the system. We go on down through that. And then over on page 5, we have B, where individuals one lot wells are proposed. And then little I, the word not proposed, central water supply. Then you go to line 12 under 2 little I. The board may require a study relative to the potential availability and quality of groundwater proposed within the subdivision, which may consist of new data, existing data, or other working wells in the area. And that just gives the county commissioner another tool to make sure there's adequate water in these subdivisions before they allow that subdivision to go ahead with their permits. If you have any questions, I'll have to get Representative Brown down here to answer them.
We wouldn't want to do that. Let's don't do that. Further discussion on House Bill 75. The question's on Senator Geis's motion that House Bill 75 pass Committee of the Whole. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. House Bill 75 is passed Committee of the Whole. House Bill 94. The reading clerk will read House Bill 94.
House Bill number 94, sponsored by Representative Stubson. Attorneys, requirements for admission to bar, and act relating to attorneys at law. It was referred to Committee number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Coe, DeCarrier, Jennings, Massey, and Von Fladern, Senator Co-Chairman.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I hope that it does so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 94. And to explain this, go to Senator Cooper.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to, if I could, re-refer this explanation of the bill to one of our resident experts in the Senate on this, Senator Perkins.
Back to the resident expert.
Mr. Chairman, can we have a ruling on that? I don't know if that was a forward pass or a lateral, so it's a fumble. I don't know. Anyway, I'm not exactly sure why Senator Cooper felt the need to do this, but I'm happy to help my friend. What this bill does is there's a provision in the existing statute on admission to the bar. And don't worry, this is not bar licenses or otherwise dealing with liquor licenses, but simply one with the practice of law. The old statute, as you read there in the cross-stat language, allowed someone to attend law school for 1 year and then basically study, or if you would, maybe for lack of a better word, apprentice with an attorney and for 2 years, and then with that, then sit for the bar and begin the practice of law. I actually had a law partner who obtained her law license this way, although she continued with law school and graduated, so only was effective for her for about 9 months. The long and short of it is that this would remove that requirement, and ultimately you have to go to an accredited law school in order to obtain your law degree in order to sit for the bar and be a member of the professional
of that professional organization. It's kind of an antiquated thing. Ultimately, it kind of harkens back to the day when there were not law schools, or there were law schools only admitted men and didn't admit women. Most of those things have gone by the wayside. Again, it's not a the only other thing that the bill does is removed in there. There used to be a requirement that a person be a citizen of the United States in order to qualify for that. It also deletes that provision. Apparently, there has been some feedback that is probably not constitutional in order to have that specific requirement in there, and so it also deletes that provision as well. I don't want to belabor that any longer the explanation any longer. If there's questions, I'll try and answer them. Otherwise, request your favorable consideration.
Discussion on House Bill 94. Senator Vasey.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any great feelings about this one way or another, but haven't there been some fairly famous attorneys that achieved their degree to practice law this way? I think we celebrated one of them the other day, a guy dressed up like an attorney that hadn't gone to the Wyoming Law School. Sometimes we get ahead of ourselves, but the other thing, I'm going to have to start carrying a wristband for plays, you know, like the quarterbacks, surveyors out, attorneys in, just so I know what's going on.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, this bill, and the answer to the good senator's question, there's been some very famous ones, some of whom have been president of the United States. And more recently, I know my first House Judiciary Chairman had obtained her license this way, and she's a very good lawyer. This has been used relatively recently, but this is the historic way that it was done. And rising against the bill, I think this is an historic monument in our statutes, and I think we ought to preserve some of those. I think this is the appropriate place to preserve this kind of history. We have destroyed some of them. I recall the bill that prohibited women from playing three-card Monty on the trains. And I warn you, we defeated that attempt to repeal, and then they snuck it through at a revision and repealed it anyhow. But we ought to keep some of these historic monuments and some of these historic pathways. I think they lend a flavor of history to our state, and I think they're appropriate.
Further discussion on House Bill 94. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it would be nice, and I agree with that. Sometimes when you repeal some of the older statutes, it's a little bit sad because there's some history that goes along with that. But the other side of the coin is also simply this. Ultimately, we have delegated to our professional organizations the right to establish the requirements for admission to those professional societies and those professional organizations. And we delegate to them significant authority to make the decision about what it takes to practice in that area. In this, there have been a few in the past that have done that. But in this day and age, with the availability of education, with the other things that you have out there, with the ability to require some standardized, accredited form of study, ultimately does protect the public. By going to an accredited school, all law schools are accredited by various accrediting organizations that look at that, assess the curriculum, assess what's going on there, and make sure that when you come out of there, that at least at some point in your life on graduation, you did know something about the law. And ultimately, it would be nice to preserve that, but you could say the same thing about doctors. You didn't have to go to 4 years of medical school to be a doctor. You didn't have to used to have we've upped the requirements. A year ago, we required audiologists to have doctorates. And so ultimately, when you come in this as a professional organization, you're dealing not necessarily with people's lives in the law, but you are dealing with their lives when it comes to criminal cases, but certainly with their property and property interests. And ultimately, it would be nice to do that, but you need to recognize that there's a board of examiners, there's a professional society a professional board that's appointed by the governor, that is approved by this body, that examines these things, and they've specifically requested this, And so it would be nice to have that, but ultimately I believe that those feelings of nostalgia must give way to the appropriate and serious administration of law and justice in our courts. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion? Questions on Senator Jennings' motion that House Bill 94, pass Committee of the Whole. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay?
No.
Committee, House Bill 94 has failed to pass Committee of the Whole. The division being called for. All in favor of the motion, please stand. Twelve. All opposed, please stand. House Bill 94 has failed to pass Committee of the Whole pursuant to Rule 11-5, having failed a standing division vote. A roll call vote is required. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
No.
Bebout excused. Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
DeCaria?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Honeycutt? Jennings, Johnson,
excused.
Landon, Larson, Martin, Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Perkins, Peterson, Ross?
Aye.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Sessions?
No.
Townsend?
No.
Basie?
No.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Hines?
No.
Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 11 ayes, 17 noes, 2 excused.
House Bill 94 has failed. A roll call vote is deemed indefinitely postponed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've all heard the motion. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. That motion's passed.
Good job.
There were a lot of committee bills, difficult
reading
bills.
The clerk will read the committee the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 58, do pass. House Bill 90, do pass. House Bill 80, do pass amended. House Bill 102, failed to pass Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. House Bill 65, do pass. House Bill 2, do pass amended. House Bill 165, do pass. House Bill 2, do pass amended. House Bill 6, do pass. House Bill 10, do pass amended. House Bill 26, do pass. House Bill 16, do pass amended. House Bill 22, do pass. House Bill 35, do pass. House Bill 48, do pass amended. And House Bill 75, do pass amended. And House Bill 94, failed to pass Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. Senator Coe, Chairman.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, move for adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The report has been adopted. Report from standing committees.
February the 17th, 2009. Mr. President, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 111, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend. Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 17th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 241, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Massey, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 17th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number three, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 287, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Larson, Martin, Perkins, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman. February the 17th, 2009, Mr. President, your committee number three, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 145, engrossed, reports back with the recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Larson's, Perkins, and Schiffer. Noes, Senator Case and Martin, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Senate be adjourned until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. Again, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Announcement, Senator Geis.
Mr. President, your committee number five, Agriculture, Public Land, and Water Resources, will meet in about 5 minutes, as quick as we can get up there, to handle House Bill 226, State Land Grazing Leases, House Bill 176, B, X-Rays Equipment Appropriation, and H.J. 8, Equine Resources.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m. Committee members, note them on standard time, 7:30 a.m. in the regular committee room, House Bill 54, Workers' Compensation Amendments.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, your committee number 4 is going to meet in about 10 minutes over in S-11 to continue its work on House Bill 114, Community College Amendments.
Senator Larson.
President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow, 30 minutes after the noon recess in S-18, to consider House Joint Resolution 7, U.S. Constitutional Convention repeal, and House Bill 295, engrossed, Western States Energy and Environment Symposium.
Senator Von Platerman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, will meet 10 minutes after adjournment tomorrow, Wednesday, February 18th, in S-13, to consider House Bill 125, Establishment of Highways, and House Bill 183, Military Tuition Assistance.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. President, committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet upon adjournment to consider House Bill 91, Public Fire and Electrical Plan Review, House Bill 118, Engrossed, Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act, House Bill 252, Wyoming Retirement System Hospital Participation. We'll meet, the committee then meets tomorrow at 8 a.m. to consider House Bill 43, Military Department Leasing Fees, House Bill 46, Engrossed, National Guard Medical Professional Retention Program. We'll meet at 1 p.m. to consider House Bill 47, Engrossed, Commercial Signage on Highways, House Bill 96, Engrossed, Railroad Quiet Zones. Then we'll meet upon adjournment to consider House Bill 180, Engrossed, Public Transit Account Funding, and House Bill 229, Engrossed, Court Security and Reimbursement.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your conference committee on House Bill 9, Cluster Development, still going to try to meet tonight. We're hoping it's real short. We're going to meet after the first bill in agriculture because two of the members of the other bodies are presenting a bill up there, but we'll meet in S-19.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow morning at 7:30 a.m. in Senate Room 1 to consider the following bills. House Bill 297, Simple Assault. House Bill 237, Name Changes Sealed. House Bill 289, Child Protection Hearings.
You've heard the motion. The Senate shall stand adjourned until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning, Wednesday, February 18th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate is adjourned. Senator Burns.
May I have privilege of the floor, please?
You may.
I'd like to introduce Senator Eli Bebout.
He's late. The Senate is adjourned.